Hi everyone, and welcome to this very special episode of Inside the Ropes. It is the first ever ITR WrestleMania Roundtable. Although WrestleMania 32 is the fourth or fifth WrestleMania we've covered in our tenure, this is the first time we thought to do a roundtable discussion a few days after, well, nearly a week after the pay-per-view airs, to think about all the things that have happened since then, let the dust settle, and let our opinions be a little bit more informed by what happened the next night on Raw, because as we've come to discover, the next night on Raw is obviously a very important part of WrestleMania now. So, I am Robert Duffin, obviously, and I am here with our resident NXT expert, Sondra, and my very own Elizabeth, David J. McCutcheon. How are you both?
Doing pretty well.
Yeah, I think that we're in good company because we're with you, Robert. Oh, so automatically we're doing well.
If it weren't snowing, I'd be a lot happier.
Oh, it's like 60 degrees here and beautiful. It's wonderful.
Yeah. I have snow on the ground, and I had trouble driving home last night in April.
I think I am the little bear's porridge. I'm sort of right in the middle. It's not too warm, but it's not snowing, so.
It's beautiful, sunny, and there's a nice breeze. It's shorts weather. You can officially wear shorts, so it's like, ooh, all right.
Nice.
All right, everything's warming up. Meanwhile, all you Michiganders up there dealing with your snow.
Ugh. Yeah, like a week and a half ago, it was almost up to 70.
This is why you'll never get a WrestleMania, Sondra.
I know.
Hey, Detroit got a Super Bowl. So
That's true.
I will say that. So they did get a Super Bowl, and my team lost in it. So fuck Detroit is basically.
Well,
yeah.
I can't.
By the way, apparently in Michigan now they're calling Detroit the D or the Big D, and I'm like that's not what you need to be calling a city, right? There's one thing that you think of whenever you think of the D, right? Like no.
Isn't that what they call Dallas too?
It is. The Big D is what they call Dallas, and that's what brought it up between me and the wife. And I was like, no. There's only one thing that's a D, and that's a wiener. There's no city. No. Whoever's coming up with this terminology needs to stop.
Yeah, that's the East Side. I don't know what they do over there.
Yeah, it's very true. Yeah.
2.5 minutes in, and we're talking about dicks. Only here.
It didn't take long.
Inside the Ropes. Well, I don't want to reveal any special changes coming to Inside the Ropes. Obviously, though. King Dickhead might be making an appearance at some point. It's an insider joke. Very quickly before we start, I just want to say thank you to everybody who listened to 7 Days, 7 Podcasts and the WrestleMania 32 review, and also got in touch with us. We had a lot of lovely messages and tweets from people saying that they really enjoyed the coverage. It psyched them up more for WrestleMania. They thought the conversations were good, the content was good, and obviously we really appreciate it, but we also... You know, we wouldn't be able to do all this kind of stuff if we didn't have people listening. Well, we would be able to do it, but it would be kind of pointless and really sad. So it's nice to hear that people enjoy the shows that we put out. And if you want to get in touch with us, not to say nice things, but, you know, feel free to, you can do so on Facebook. Just search for Inside the Ropes, like, and you can start conversations there. Or you can get us at Twitter at @Inside_the_Ropes, at @Bertie_ITR at Zoop Soul. Spell it out, Jeff Jarrett style, David.
ZOOPSOUL.
And Sondra, I don't know if you can do a handy Jeff Jarrett style one for Sondra Ruth RW, but give it a go anyway.
There are no double letters.
I know, it's just kind of SONDRARW.
That's really all that I can do.
I was going to say, it's not W, though. If it were Jeff Jarrett, it'd be W. There you go.
Well, let's not talk too much about Jeff Jarrett, because my whole thing with this episode was...
W.
I wouldn't cover the news. I'll leave all the news for a regular episode at the start of next week, but it is kind of difficult to not, when you mention Jeff Jarrett, to bring up the whole selling for gold.
The gold thing?
Yeah.
What the hell, Jeff Jarrett?
I have no idea. It's like a total pyramid
scheme. Like a gold scam.
Nonsense,
yeah.
Isn't it? That's like, you know, WWE using Monday Night Raw to sell Herbalife juice. It's just the most bizarre thing. Like Jeff Jarrett coming out of a GWF tape and like, before we get this wrestling started, anybody got some spare gold?
Yeah, seriously.
Anybody got an old ring?
Do you think he had like one of those guys twirling the cash for gold sign too? Like,
I really like hope there's someone outside the Jeff Wrestling office with a sign that they're spinning around, like. And a wacky waving inflatable arm flailing tube man just for kicks.
I'm imagining the conversation though, where it's like, "Hello, yes, it was Jeff Wrestling, gold to bullion thing," and it's like, "I've got a title belt to pawn." Magnus, is that you? Nope, it is not Magnus. I am
not Magnus.
I am Mingus. A totally different British person. So I'm sure that won't happen because I'm pretty. In fact, we need to get this photo because this is a total spoiler. But when Magnus was with us on tour, he had the Jeff Wrestling World Title, and he left it alone at one point. And I was sitting with Ollie, our photographer, and I went, "There is no way I'm not getting my photo taken with this title." After joking about Jeff Wrestling for 2 years, it has to be done. So Ollie does have a photo of me, like with the belt over my shoulder, like posing like I'm the Jeff Wrestling World Champion.
That's amazing.
So I need to get that and put it on the Facebook just for fun. But I'm not too sure how much gold is actually in it. I don't know whether Jeff would give us any good bonds. But
is it real gold? Now, see, I feel like if you left it on your shoulder long enough, you'd have like this big green stain on there.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, the thing is that the Jeff Wrestling logo does have green in it, and I wasn't really sure whether it's like, do you want us to paint it or just let it go? Make the logo green, the belt's going green. Not that it was anyway, let's get into it. But before we get into, well, this, you know, the roundtable has begun, folks, but before we get into WrestleMania and the fallout, let's take a brief diversion, a happy diversion, I'm sure, for many people. If you listen to 7 Day 7 podcast, you'll have heard the review of NXT TakeOver Dallas. Myself, Sondra, and Kenny did that last Saturday, I believe. But David was not on that show, so just to kick us off, I know that you caught up with most of the show. It was kind of a bit of a critical hit with us. I've seen a fair few matches from it more times this week than I've seen many matches. In fact, I was so excited about the sort of post-NXT stuff that I tuned in to watch this week's episode of NXT to discover it was all recaps of the show and the match with Elias Samson and Apollo Crews, which was not really that great. But, yeah. I mean, some people kind of enjoyed... I saw some people tweeting saying that they liked the fact that the next episode of NXT was a recap because it showed that it was important. But I kind of feel like, you know, NXT does only... or mostly get watched on the WWE Network, and presumably that means that if you're you know, savvy enough to tune into NXT on the network, you probably watched TakeOver Dallas, but I guess, you know, the good stuff will kick back in next week with the stuff they take to Access and more Nakamura, but anyway.
I was so excited for something to happen on NXT too, and then, like, nothing happened. But yeah, next week we actually start doing things again, I hope.
David, what's your thoughts on Dallas?
What's really strange to me, though, with the recap, right? So there's a lot of people who casually tune in to NXT, and I'm one of them. So, like, for instance, I didn't watch the recap show, but I did watch TakeOver, right? So it almost feels kind of skewed. It's like on TakeOver they should be plugging the NXT show a little more instead of plugging a pay-per-view that already happened for people. If you're watching NXT this week, it's not like you miss TakeOver. You know what I mean? You watch both of them.
Unless you only watch it on Hulu. Would be the only way.
I wonder how their Hulu numbers are, though, in contrast to the network numbers.
Probably not great.
And if you were that interested, I think that you would have ordered the network and got it. You know what I mean? So I don't really know. Like, I think wedging at least a couple of matches in there with some highlights. But even then, you know, you don't want to give away too much because you want people to actually watch it. I can see it both ways, but from a business standpoint, I just don't get it. As for TakeOver, though, smash success. Best wrestling show of the week by far. Really good. Anyone who knows anything about me knows that I am the world's biggest Sami Zayn El Generico mark. I've got my El Generico mask looking at me right now. So, I mean, I love that match. It had the perfect outcome. I like that it was a fight. It wasn't a wrestling match. It was a fight. And that's what Shinsuke Nakamura is good at, you know? I watch New Japan every week. That's just what he does. He's a great wrestler, you know, don't get me wrong. But the things that you show your friends about him, it's not his wrestling maneuvers. It's how hard he hits people with his fists and his knees. So it was very good. I think that Sami Zayn is probably the best striker that's in the WWE besides Sheamus, which is kind of funny given the A, they're both gingers, and B, the size differential. You know, I mean, you've got Sami Zayn, who's kind of small, and then you have Sheamus, who was a very large, intimidating man, right? So I'd love to see a match between those two guys, actually. That would be – I don't think I ever would have stated that I'd love to see a match with Sheamus until now, but no, it's very
Sami Zayn is magic.
Yeah, it's true. But I love hard-hitting wrestling, stiff wrestling, snug wrestling, as Steve Austin says. That's something that I have a penchant for. I love that stuff. So it was a major coup for the WWE, I think, to get Nakamura and to put on that type of wrestling match, because it's very unlike anything that we've seen in a long, long time for the WWE. And in a land of people who punch like Dean Ambrose, to where it kind of looks like you're giving them a slow motion cuddle, it's a breath of fresh air. I enjoyed it a lot. The entire show was good. As you may have guessed from from that link that I sent you about Shane's son chanting bullshit at them stopping the Samoa Joe Finn Balor match over and over and over again, I wasn't a huge fan of that. I know that it's a divisive subject, but I wasn't a huge fan of all the stoppages. I think if they would have cut it, if they would have trimmed down the stoppages in half, it would have been perfect. Because I like the story that Joe and Finn told between the ropes with the stoppages. It's like every time that Joe would get the upper hand, they would allow Finn to recuperate. But after like five times, you're just kind of like, oh, for fuck's sake, you need to figure this out. You need to sort it. Either stop the match outright because you're killing the momentum of it. And it's making Finn look stupid because he gets done selling and he's like, all right, we're ready to go now, right? And they're like, no, hold on, another 2 minutes and 45 seconds. And he's like, ah, shit. So he's sitting there twiddling his thumbs in the corner, trying to look dazed, even though he's on his feet. And he's trying to look as though there's been permanent damage done to him in the match. So eventually it just undercut them a bit. And so I wasn't a huge fan of how many times they stopped it, especially for the type of injury it was. A lot of people loved it. They thought it added momentum to the match. It really took the wind out of my sails, though. It ended up being a great match after they decided, all right, fuck it, and just let him bleed. So that was the good thing, at least. But you don't have to worry about hepatitis with these type of wrestlers. It didn't look like an injury that was going to leave him permanently blind. And that's fine if they want to check that out, make sure that that's going to go okay. Hey, I'm all about wrestler safety. But at some point, it becomes a carnival. And this one was bordering circus antics, in my opinion. So that's essentially the gist of what I have to say. The tag title switching was great. Good moment. I enjoyed just about every match except for the Austin Aries one. It kind of fell a little flat for me. I never realized how small Austin Aries was.
Oh, he's tiny.
Yeah, tiny little man, and you wouldn't guess it because, I mean, you know, he has an Eddie Guerrero presence about him, right? You know, like Eddie Guerrero, tiny little guy. But then whenever he's in the ring, you're like, man, that guy's a giant, right? You know, so he has the ability to kind of like blow on his thumb and puff up real big, you know, kind of like a balloon animal or something. Yeah, huh? Yeah, it's kind of fun though. But yeah, the entire event was stellar though. I would give the show 9 out of 10 probably overall. Really, really good stuff. Women's match was great. Title change was good. I enjoyed that. No, it was good. entire thing, just a solid wrestling show.
So speaking of the Austin Aries match with Baron Corbin, I'm going to be jumping around a little bit during our discussion. So let's talk a little bit about Big Banter Corbin. Obviously, he lost to Austin Aries, but then debuted at WrestleMania in the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal, which he won. Then he turned up on Raw to have... Who did he wrestle on Raw?
Ziggler.
He wrestled Dolph Ziggler.
He wasn't the only NXT call-up, which has now become an expected thing. We also had Enzo and Cass. We had Apollo Crews. I think that was it. Wasn't it those three?
Yes. Vaudevillains on SmackDown.
Vaudevillains on SmackDown. Yeah. So, Sandra, we introduced you as the NXT expert. Let's talk a little bit about the call-ups just now. I feel like they're varying. This could also segue into a discussion about crowds, because the crowds were...
I was going to say, unfortunately, Baron Corbin debuted at the same time as a beach ball. And,
didn't work out so well from there. So, yeah, what do you think of the NXT call-ups? I think they range from about time to really?
They all make sense to me, actually. The one that actually surprised me most was Baron Corbin, because something that I had thought during WrestleMania and after WrestleMania, like right before Raw, I just was writing out some thoughts just so I would remember my state of mind prior to Raw. And I was like, I don't know, is Baron Corbin going to be on the main roster? Is he not? Like, I think taking the Andre Memorial Battle Royal win back to NXT could have been a pretty fun character thing for him. I think, like, you know, if he can lord that over people, because, like, yeah, I lost to Austin Aries, but I'm still way better than all of you schmucks because I won the Battle Royal and that kind of thing. But he's going to be on the main roster. I hope that he uses it as a talking point still. Look how well it worked out for Antonio Cesaro in the Big Show. But, I mean, Baron Corbin makes sense, I guess. I don't know where that leaves us in NXT as far as heels in the main title scene, though, because there really aren't any except for Samoa Joe. So I guess, you know, we'll see what happens there. Maybe somebody will turn. Maybe Finn Balor will be a heel. That'd be kind of awesome. Except for that would mean no more fun entrances with Bayley, which would be sad. But no, Apollo Crews makes all of the sense in the world to me, though, because he's not been doing anything in NXT. He's just been boring, kind of. And he's really, really good. And you wouldn't think Apollo Crews boring? Like, that doesn't make any sense. But he's been doing nothing in terms of character or story. Like, he shows up, he smiles, he wrestles, he wins sometimes. He doesn't always win. When he lost, he got a little more interesting just because he lost. But I think, like, what he can do, the types of moves he can do and whatnot, are going to serve him well on the main roster, because he can do flips, and someone of his size and someone of his stature, you don't expect him to be doing standing moonsaults and stuff like that. And I think that can wow an audience in the same way that Adrian Neville can wow an audience, but he's a lot smaller than Apollo Crews. Apollo Crews is kind of like the total package if you want to make a top guy, and I think he could be eventually in WWE. And Enzo and Cass make perfect sense. We kind of expected that one, right? And it was perfect. It was so good. I was so excited when they came out. And, you know, talking about the crowd and everything, the crowd was really not into this Raw until Enzo and Cass kind of saved it for the whole show. And when Enzo and Cass came out, I think the way I put it on Twitter was, like, their promo was like introducing a new audience to a greatest hits tour, because Fall Back Like Your Hairline, they've used that before for Sylvester LaForte. Like, Smack Talker Skywalker makes appearances from time to time in promos. Love Smack Talker Skywalker with his microphone lightsaber for a hater, you know? And so I'm not only speaking along with their whole intro, I'm like, ah, Smack Talker Skywalker, ah, you're saying this. Oh my gosh, this is so awesome. And it was like the audience was so into it too. And it was really exciting for me to see them on a big stage, get a great reaction, get to interact with the Dudleys, which is a big thing, you know, like that's a big deal for them.
Yeah.
And I thought that the Enzo and Cass segment was perfect. Absolutely loved it. And I think, you know, they were super over. I didn't understand commentary though during that segment though, because Michael Cole, as soon as they came out, like, I reverted back to NXT of old Michael Cole, because he goes, are you kidding me? As soon as Soft as a Sin hits. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Are you kidding? Like, yeah, Enzo and Cass are here. This is amazing. What's your problem? Do you think it's 2010 right now? Like, what are you doing? And then he's like, well, they're an acquired taste. It's like, yeah, well, apparently that taste gets acquired pretty quickly because the entire audience is chanting along with them. So,
if I may quote Bob's Burgers, whenever Tina tries espresso for the first time and they ask her how it is, she goes, it's an acquired taste, which I just acquired.
That's interesting because the commentary did make some odd calls all night. You know, we saw in the open where they almost apologized in advance for the crowd.
For the crowd.
And said it was a bit bizarre.
Yeah, that really rubbed me the wrong way.
I think, if you don't mind, what I might suggest we do is that we talk about that and the crowd reaction and just the general booking of Raw as a whole, maybe towards the end. I mean, we've got a good discussion point. But the thing that I didn't understand, is especially about Enzo and Cass, was that sort of, I don't know whether they think, which is possible, like maybe they think some people will find them annoying, like you're sort of maybe an older audience might find them irritating or a bit too cartoonish, but I've never really met anyone who I've said check these guys out and have gone oh no. And when they said, like, you know, oh, they're not to everyone's taste, it wasn't like they were coming out like, hey assholes, you know, like anybody.
No, it
wanna...
wasn't like Enzo Amore's debut. Like in NXT, he debuted that character as a heel, right? Like he was a heel to get squashed, and he came out and he called everyone fugazis, like you're poor, blah blah blah. I mean, Soft, all of that started as a heel thing, and it got so over that, whoops, babyface, right?
Yeah, they weren't like, let's all jump in the van and go beat up some queers and chase pussy or something.
No,
like, you know, like, it wasn't like you were going, oh my god, this will really alienate some people.
It's like, oh no, it's a Clockwork Orange come to life.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Like, these guys, they're a bit racist and very homophobic.
it's like what introducing
you
your...
Oh,
your
so you mean they're WWE baby faces.
Well, yeah, very good point, yeah.
It's like, here's my disenfranchised drunk white friend. He says shit that's a little racist from time to time. Don't mind him, though. He doesn't feel that way in his heart. It's not like that.
No, I didn't get that. You know, he said, you might not like him, but, you know, I really like him. It wasn't anything like that. The one thing with Apollo Crews, I don't know what your take on it is, David. I mean, I've seen him wrestle before when he was Uha Nation and stuff. And I mean, no denying and taking away nothing from his in-ring stuff. But I would have put him quite low on the totem, mostly because he's kind of...
He hasn't gained any steam in NXT.
There is that, and I can kind of see where Sonder, where your argument's coming from. It's like, well, you know, he's not really doing anything, so... But he just... I don't think people are going to hate me for this, but he's kind of a little bland.
Yeah, and that's actually an issue with him not doing anything in NXT. That's the purpose of NXT, is to build something interesting. Look at Enzo and Cass, by contrast, right?
Yeah.
They are the most interesting act on Raw all of a sudden out of nowhere, right? Like, they saved Monday Night Raw. They really did. I tweeted that. Monday Night Raw was going pretty good, and then it really lost momentum there for a minute, and then boom, they came out and just, it was like a kickstart, right?
That's the purpose of
NXT. And Apollo Crews is not really connecting on that level. Hey, listen, the guy is a complete package. He's a five-tool player. He's got everything that you would want in a wrestler, or a sports entertainer for that matter. But he needs to develop a character. Right now, being the super fit, really athletic, super strong black guy, I don't really know how far that can get you, especially in a company that doesn't really honor and specialize in treating black performers that well. It's not been their specialty. No matter how you cut it, there's been one black champion in the history of Raw, and all they do is mention how Samoan he is at every overture. So for Apollo Crews, I don't really know what he needs to do, but he needs to find something to make him stand out besides the color of his skin and his abilities, because that's all Vince is going to see. And that can't be a character. You need to build something larger than that.
I agree.
So for his sake, I really hope he does, because he's a guy who performed regularly throughout St. Louis here where I live. I love the guy. He's a really nice guy. I'm really hoping he makes something huge of himself, but we know how Vince has predisposed tendencies, and I don't want him to be another Ezekiel Jackson or Elijah Burke or anything else because he's so much better than them. And yeah. He has the chance, he has the strength, he has the athleticism, he has the agility, he's the total package. And I honestly believe that if you put a mic in front of him, he could knock it out of the park. But the whole purpose of NXT is to develop a character, which he failed to do, besides just being this really good worker. So,
well, I will say, though, with that, like, NXT is to develop a character, but a lot of times you develop a character in NXT, and it becomes embedded in NXT, and then it doesn't work when you get to the main roster, right? So
yeah.
There could be an advantage for him moving up now and creating a character on the main roster. Like, I'd argue the Shield never created characters in NXT. I mean, Roman Reigns was an entitled douchebag, and Dean Ambrose wasn't on NXT.
So he was
and
then just Seth being Rollins himself.
he was just being himself. And Seth Rollins was just like the happy rock star babyface champion before the Shield. So, you know, there could be an advantage for him not carrying baggage of a character like, you know, Bo Dallas did, or like, I don't know, like, there are so many characters, right, that were so great in NXT, and they just don't translate. So maybe I'm just being overly optimistic, but it could work to his benefit. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I
would argue that the Shield was a success because they came in and they squashed main event talent on night one. And that didn't happen here. It could work to his benefit, though. I mean, you know, stranger things have happened. For his sake, though, I hope he figures it out, and I hope he does well.
It's not, I mean, obviously Enzo and Cass are just a force of personality that, you know, it's not going to, I can't imagine them not getting over in the way that so many gimmicks have died on the transition. I mean, it kind of, you know, like in the Terminator franchise where they're like, you got to time travel naked, like you can't wear any clothes when you go through this time travel thing. I feel like maybe Apollo Crews is like the first guy that's like, I can't go up there with a gimmick because it just gets torn up by the time travel. Of the movie.
Requiem
between.
For Tyler Breeze, Apollo Crews' debut opponent.
Definitely. WrestleMania kicked off with the ladder match for the Intercontinental title. We will talk about some of our favourites, Mr. Kevin Owens and Mr. Sami Zayn, a little bit later on, because both of those guys would walk out, not the winners. I don't want to call them losers, ever. Neither of them left for the Intercontinental title, but they would maybe go on to bigger and better things. But Zack Ryder won that match, which was a surprise to everyone apart from British bookmakers, apparently, who had him as the favourite for a few days. It was somewhat the theme of the whole week of WrestleMania was like something that was divisive or really split people. A lot of people were very happy for Zack getting his moment. Another opposing group said, you know, it was 5 years too late. You know, I don't get it why he's getting this now. And then obviously the next night on Raw, and I just knew it. As soon as I saw The Miz goad him in to put in the title on the line, I was like, this is over. I mean, I did think, I mean, it was said many times, like, he might just lose it the next night. As soon as that happened, I went, this is over. And The Miz becomes the Intercontinental Champion. So we go from the Intercontinental title being around the waist of Kevin Owens, potentially moving into a feud with Sami Zayn. It then drops from those two, who are going on to different things. It drops to Zack Ryder, and now it's on The Miz, who does now have his lovely wife Maryse in his corner, which is actually pretty good casting, if you ask me. I don't know why it's taken them so long to say, hey, your wife is like, I mean, not that she is, but, you know, she comes across as an absolute bitch. So it's good. This could be great, like, valet.
She's got to be if she's married to The Miz.
Yeah. So, I mean, what
I'm
do you guys
so
think
excited
about
for Miz and Maryse. I am so excited about
so
that.
So what about your sort of reactions, first of all, to Ryder winning in the first place, and then I guess how much that's been overridden by what happened on Raw. Sandro, I'll go to you.
I really loved the Intercontinental Ladder match, first of all. I thought it was great, and I think it kind of felt during the match like anybody could win it. And then I sort of got a feeling about Ryder in the match, and I was like, why didn't I talk more about him during predictions, right? And then I was really happy for him. I was kind of like, what is happening? Oh my gosh, Zack Ryder just won the Intercontinental title. But I think it's great, and I think it was a great moment for him. And I think, you know, him, they mentioned it on Raw too, him talking about how when he was 10 or something, he held Razor Ramon's Intercontinental title, and then, you know, he found him backstage and had Scott Hall hold, you know, Zack Ryder's belt, and how that's just a cool moment, and you can't take that away from him, right? And so I was really happy for him in that moment. I kind of have to wonder, because if original plans were for Kevin Owens to retain, as I've read that they are, like, that would take things in such a different direction, right? Because Kevin Owens didn't just win it back on Raw, like, The Miz did, so now they're going in all this different direction. And I know a lot of people were really deflated on Raw when The Miz won, because they said it, you know, it invalidated it, or what was the point of Zack Ryder winning? And I don't think you can take that moment away from him. Like, for that moment on that night, at WrestleMania, you know, he walked out of WrestleMania the Intercontinental Champion. And I don't think you can say there's no point to that, because that's so cool for him. Like, someone who has loved wrestling this long and who did work his butt off, I mean, albeit years ago, to get himself over and try to make something of himself, and they just kind of, like, squashed him down, right? So, I don't know. I think it was a great feel-good moment. And if the point was to get it on The Miz in a contentious fashion, then they did it, right? And I think it's cool, because right now, if they decide to go this way, and who knows, I mean, it could be another Zack Ryder tragedy story of just getting pushed to the side again. But if they decide to go this way, they have the setup for a really cool story. Because if you have Zack Ryder chasing back for the belt against his evil foe, The Miz, and, you know, The Miz and Maurice are horrible people, right? Like, the characters, not necessarily the people, but, you know, they're horrible people. And, you know, they're the most hateable heels, right? The Miz is the most hateable heel on the roster, except for maybe Roman Reigns and Eva Marie. And so I think you have the makings of a really cool story, the underdog that everybody wants to win, and then the most hateable heels in the world who are so evil, who are, you know, being opportunistic and causing all this havoc. And I think Miz and Maurice are going to be a great dynamic. And I think they have the makings of something really cool that I hope they go with. And it doesn't end up just being The Miz and Dolph Ziggler.
Yeah. If it ends up being The Miz and Dolph Ziggler, I'll just blow my head off.
I guess the one kind of thing for me is that, yeah, I agree that the, I mean, I saw so many people going, I hate The Miz and I can't believe he's the champion. Him and his wife are a pair of pricks. I hate them. And I was like, well, good, because you're meant to hate them. So that is good. The other side of the coin for me was sort of, like, Zack Ryder feuding with The Miz over the Intercontinental title feels so 2011 that it kind of feels, you know, that it's almost like a regression in some way. But then, I guess it's, I mean,
it's a very different Miz nowadays, though.
It is a different Miz, and it does also seem to be a different Zack Ryder. David, you were really big on Ryder winning the title, right? You thought that was great.
I thought this was the best match of the night, and I thought it was the best moment of the night, actually. This was something that I didn't know that I wanted until I got it. And usually that's the best thing in wrestling, right? like the bookers, of course, I don't think they made the decision like 5 minutes before the show started. Okay. But if it were by design, this would be like what you strive for as a booker, to give people something that they didn't know that they wanted until they got it. I thought that it was a great feel-good moment, the best feel-good moment since Daniel Bryan won the title at Mania, by far, actually. I loved the match itself. It had a whole lot of great spots. Huge props to Sin Cara, actually. He did some really crazy cool stuff during this. Our boy Sami Zayn stole the show with his dive through the ladder and then, of course, through the turnbuckle. He finally got that spot in at Mania. Him and Kevin Owens got in their traditional ladder spot where Sami Zayn takes the back body drop onto the ladder. They've done that through the indies for 15 years, so that was kind of fun to see at WrestleMania, right? Can't go wrong with that. The decision itself, even if, and I am one of those people that feels like it kind of cheapens the victory for me as a viewer. You can't take away that feel good moment though from Zack Ryder. It's very easy for us to throw stones and pick it apart from afar, but we're not in his shoes, and he will die having that moment as his legacy. So I thought it was great. He's a guy who clearly deserved it. He's brought that company so much money with his merchandise over the years, and they didn't do anything to appease him whatsoever for all the good he's done. This was a moment that was it was a long time coming, and it offered a little bit of closure, actually, in some weird way. Like, a lot of people will go, well, you should have put it on somebody who you should have put it on somebody who they were going to push or this or that. Okay, but in the instance of Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn, they don't need a title for their feud. Their feud is going to be marquee. And if you give it a little bit of time to saturate in the characters of Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn for the regular casual viewer to see what these characters are about and their long-standing rivalry, they're going to get into it just as much as we are. It's just one of those feuds that makes sense. It doesn't need a title. As to where with Zack Ryder, maybe they decided to do this as a attaboy for putting up with Mojo Rawley in NXT. I certainly hope so anyway, because that would mean that he's away from him. I hope this is something... Here's my big issue with it. If Zack Ryder just dropped the title to The Miz, who I despise, and my wife despises, Robert is very well aware of this fact. If they just put the title on Ryder to drop it to Miz, and then lose his title rematch on SmackDown, and then to fade away into obscurity and go back to the Mojo Rawley thing, then I'm going to be really upset, because the one thing that they proved at WrestleMania is that Zack Ryder can draw money. And the crowd ate it up. He sells merchandise by the ton whenever he's on TV, and he's a character that people can relate with. The only thing that he needs to do is get rid of that Jersey Shore stuff, embrace his dorky thing. That's why people liked him from the first place. No one went, I love this Jersey Shore guy. Zero people love him for the Jersey Shore thing. They love him because he's a nerd. He's a dork. He's like the rest of us. That's what Zack Ryder's appeal is. Drop the Jersey Shore thing because Enzo and Cass blew it out of the water. That's their thing now. They did it better than Zack Ryder ever did. Embrace a dorkier character, the ultimate underdog character. I don't know how well that would clash with the underdog from the underground thing that Sami Zayn's doing, but Sami Zayn's very charismatic on his own. I think he can get by. Ultimate underdog with Zack Ryder, make it into a long-standing thing. Even if he just loses to The Miz over and over again, make it into a couple-of-month feud. Give him a pay-per-view match. See what kind of money you can draw with Zack Ryder in 2016. That's all I wanted from the outcome of Zack Ryder winning the IC title. We'll see how it goes, though.
It's funny you should mention the he's just like us thing, because I don't know if you saw this or not, and this is more of a news thing, and I'm almost remiss to bring it up, but Podcast One, they... brought a new wrestling figure into their fold this week. They have taken on Vince Russo and his brand podcast. So he was doing daily podcasts for the Realm Network, and now those daily podcasts are part of Podcast One. Now, I'd never checked out his stuff because I thought it was behind a paywall, but I don't think it is. And I think some of it is, but anyway. So I thought I'll give this a little go, and I listened to his WrestleMania 32 review and his Raw review. Both of them featured another guy called Jeff Lane, who I don't really know very much about. The WrestleMania 32 review featured Disco Inferno, because I think they're good friends. It's really, really funny, because I think that him and Jim Cornette are really like two sides of the same coin, because so many people call out Cornette for being out of touch because he thinks everything should be like it's, you know, the 1980s in Mid-South or whatever. Russo's attitude to... If you want to know how much that guy requires a filter, like, you can actually see it in action in his podcast, because some of the stuff he says, 50% of the time, is really interesting. And the other 50% of the time... I'm starting to sound like Scott Steiner. is like just the most sexist garbage. And it's really, really anti-fan. And the two things he said that really offended me were, one, he really ragged on Bill. Not just him, actually. He wasn't the worst. It was actually Disco Inferno, of all people, who didn't fucking draw money in his whole career. Like, let's just be honest. Ragging on Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens because they said that they're just indie guys and they've just transplanted them into the WWE and nobody gets them and nobody wants to see them. And like all the marks, bro, who are just going to watch the show anyway, like them because they're just as, you know, slobbish as they are. And I was like, how much you do realize these are the people that are listening to your show So there was that, which I thought was like really, really shitty.
Let me interrupt you there, Robert. No one is listening to their show.
They've gone above both Austin and Jericho on the iTunes charts this week, so that's unfortunately not true.
Well, that's the debut episode. Let's see how many of those people are around in 2 months.
But the fact is, though, there's a lot of people. I've always noticed that for all of his detractors, he has a lot of like people on Facebook and mostly Twitter who, and sometimes I agree with him. Like, I think some of the stuff he said about WrestleMania, it's almost like a hate listen. I've had hate watch TV shows. I've never had a hate listen podcast because there is like 50% of really interesting analysis. But he said this, and I was like, that's really, really unfair to those guys. And then this Jeff Lane guy said, because he also trashed the NXT crowd and said that it was just a bunch of drunks, and then somebody, I think it was actually Jeff Lane, said, no, that's not I don't think they're drunk or anything. Like, it's just, this is their gig, this is what they like. But then Jeff Lane said that, and I found this incredibly offensive, he said that the only reason the crowd hate Eva Marie is because the crowd is just all a bunch of men who know that they'll never be able to get with her, and that's why they don't like her. And I tweeted him, I got nothing back from him, and I just said, with that logic, why do they not boo every other woman in the division? Yeah. Now, the thing is that the Russo network dedicates one show a week to, it's called something ridiculous, but it's like we dedicate one episode a week to the hottest babes in wrestling, bro. The hottest chicks.
Oh, I saw that,
and I was just like, oh god. When I heard it, I was like, and then this is the hateful rhetoric of this show, that Eva Marie gets booed because wrestling fans are just big dumb men that will only boo a woman if they think she won't sleep with them, and it's like, I'm like, no, that's. You know what, maybe there's like a couple of guys that boo her because they think she's too attractive, but I think for the majority of people that are booing her, it's because she's, you know, not a very good wrestler, and she's getting the kind of attention and the spot above more talented women who maybe won't see the kind of money that she sees because of, you know, the company being so high on her, which is admittedly because of how she looks. Like, they are buying into that, but I just thought it was a really shitty attitude to take to it. And I wasn't the only person that called him out and just said, well, why do they cheer Natalya? She's a really good-looking woman. Why do they cheer Sasha Banks? Why is Sasha Banks like one of the top baby faces in the company? You know, she's a really good-looking woman. I don't really get the attitude. I thought the attitude stinks. And it's just, you know, I think coming out of this show, like Sammy and Kevin and the female performers that we're going to talk about later on are going to get a lot of praise from us for being the MVPs of the weekend. And I just thought it was really shitty that Podcast One, or I mean, you know what? Podcast One wanted like a fucking podcast that, no swearing, that would put out a couple of episodes a week that reviewed wrestling. Well, we all knew who they should have come to, but unfortunately, we don't bring with us a big bro army of knuckle draggers. Anyway, rant over.
No, unfortunately, you have a woman involved in your show, and I'm sorry, but those opinions just really aren't going to fly with me. So,
let me just say that I'm going to do my little Vince Russo impression here, okay? All right, bro, I'm a really good Christian, bro, but let me just dedicate a segment here, bro, to all the ladies I've been wanking off to for the past week, bro. I love sitting there looking up at my crucifix with Jesus on the wall while I'm spanking the monkey. Eh, spanking the monkey, get it? That was popular in 1992, just like I was. While I'm spanking the monkey to Sable, bro. Not Sable nowadays, though. She's gross, and women only have one good quality, and that's their looks, bro.
Wow. Yeah. So I hope podcast.
I thought Vince had joined us for a moment.
For inserting that clip from Vince Russo's show. And the thing is, like, I'm not a defender of him. I just think that, god damn, like, he would be like a great, like, sort of B or C player on a podcast where you would bring him in for something very specific. Like, when he talks about Triple H stuff and the Roman Reigns stuff, it's very insightful. He had an interview with Shawn Michaels on the podcast. Really, really interesting stuff from Michaels. Shawn Michaels said that he finds it the reason he doesn't miss wrestling is because he says what they do every Monday night is not what I did. It's not what I, you know, it's not the wrestling that I knew. So when I come back, I enjoy seeing everybody, but, you know, it's not the same thing. So I don't come back and go, oh, I really miss this, because they're not really doing the same thing. So, which I thought was all quite interesting. So there's some value there, but just the sexist stuff and the, you know, all the indie guys are, it's just all bullshit, you know. They're just booking for the fans and that's it, blah, blah, blah. And like, he's got this idea that, you know, WWE's biggest problem now is that they, you know, they cater too much for the hardcore fans who will be there every week anyway. And I'll be like, well, we'll get to that when we talk about this fucking main event. Next on the card is actually the Jericho AJ Styles match, but I'm going to delay that because the outcome of that is tied into the outcome of the main event in a rather strange way. So I'm going to skip over that for now, but remind me to bring it up later. So one of the big talking points was the legends and how they were used at WrestleMania. And the first time we saw that was when the League of Nations took on the New Day. New Day had the great entrance. League of Nations did not, but it suited them not to have a good entrance. And then after the League of Nations won, for whatever reason, we had Austin, Shawn Michaels, and Mick Foley come out, beat up the League of Nations, have a little kind of skit with the New Day, and Xavier Woods ate a stunner. This seemed to, again, be very divisive. It enthralled people and appalled in equal measure. As a little side note, because I'll just tell the story to save you having to go listen to Vince Russo's podcast, a lot of chatter about how good Shawn Michaels looked in terms of his shape. He did actually say that apparently like 6 or 7 weeks ago, Vince McMahon got in touch and pitched in this segment, told him, this is what you're going to be doing, but I want you in gear. And he was like, oh, you know, I don't really want to put the gear on. Like, that suggests something else is happening that it's not. And apparently, and this is, I think you guys will totally know where this is going, but Vince said to him, oh no, everybody's going to be in their gear. Like, all three of you will be in your wrestling gear. And Michaels was like, right, okay. So he said in the interview, he says, well, I just decided that if I'm going to do this, like, I'm going to get in good shape. You know, I don't want to go out there, a 50-year-old guy, and take my shirt off and everyone's like, oh, look at old chubby HBK. So, like, his wife is, like, a nutritionist or whatever, so she put him on, like, this really strict diet, and he was working out lots and all that kind of stuff. And he was like, I'm going to go back looking better than I did when I left, which, he did. And then obviously he says he got there on the day and Foley's like, well, you know, I don't have gear. I just wrestle in, you know, the shit that I wear. And, and then Austin's like, no fucking way am I going out there in the trunks. and Michaels is like, that's what Vince does. You know, Vince does this stuff. He fucks with people's heads and I got suckered in by him one more time. He's like, but, you know, at least I know that I looked okay. So,
He looked great. I despise Shawn Michaels. That guy looked phenomenal, though. I saw him and I'm like, so why did he retire again? Oh yeah, he got injured again, and he needed to. You know, you forget about that whenever you see a guy and he looks that good, right? You know, you're all like, oh, his health? Well, he looks healthy. You know, one of those things.
Right.
I love this segment. I love it. If you didn't love it, you're a party pooper. I'm sorry. There's no other way to put it. The League of Nations suck. I'm sorry. They do. That's just the God's honest. If they continue with the lad stuff, it could be fun and interesting. You know, we'll see with that. But at the same time, Wade Barrett was the one going around calling them the lads, and now, you know, he's no longer there. So, but no, I love this. I popped louder and louder because, you know, with Shawn Michaels, I was like, oh, Shawn Michaels, I don't like him. And then I saw him, and I was like, wow, Shawn Michaels looks really good. And then I heard the car crash, and obviously I'm, you know, the Mick Foley guy. So I popped for that. And I was like, wait a minute, are they going to get another guy? And then I heard the glass break, and the glass breaking is like the all-time greatest thing, right, with wrestling entrances. Like, you hear the glass break, and you just know shit's going down. it's just phenomenal, but I thought this was a very good segment. I love the stunner that Rusev took. Rusev just bumped around, he landed on his neck and rolled out of the ring. Just wonderful, just wonderful. And And he also said on Twitter that he's not going to listen to Steve Austin's podcast anymore.
That's what I was going to say.
Alexander Rusev is a gem. I just love him.
And Austin loves him as well. Have you listened to Austin's, not the podcast he did with the Big Show on the network, but the podcast he did together last week from the WrestleMania hotel? And Austin asks Big Show for Rusev's mobile number so that he can just randomly call him and say Rusev crush and hang up on him. So I think
that's amazing.
So I think that, like, Austin obviously has a soft spot for him. I think he really likes him. Any chance he gets, he always says, you know, I love the kid's work. I love the kid's work. So
he let Rusev get some blows in on him in that little confrontation before he put on the stump. So that was he got a little heat on Austin. That was cool. That was really, Austin didn't have to do that either. So he went out of his way to do that. It was really cool.
I'm kind of in that sort of in between way where I can see, it's kind of like, you know, eating junk food or something. I'm kind of going, oh, I know long term this could be bad, but you know, my body's already shit anyway, and the League of Nations are also kind of, the League of Nations are a bit shit. You know, you could argue for them being more important and all that kind of stuff, but right now they're not, and they're not immediately going to be. They're not sort of a character that you see as potentially, you don't feel that they're being wasted, unlike other people who we might get to.
Let me say this for League of Nations fans out there. Would you have rather than been involved in this match and be overshadowed by the New Day's entrance and then win the match and then that's that and no one will ever remember the segment that they were in? Or would you prefer them to be in one of the highlights of the entire show? That's your call. But to me, hey, here's the thing. If somebody came up to me and said, hey, do you want to take a Stone Cold Stunner tonight at WrestleMania and be on SportsCenter the next day? I'd fucking start going out to the secondhand store and finding the pair of work boots that looks the most like wrestling boots and lacing those motherfuckers up and marching out to that ring and taking the world's greatest stunner, which Rusev did. So that's that's the question that I will implore you, League of Nations fan, because they only have one.
the thing that I saw that I didn't agree with was the people that were like, oh, they buried New Day, and I was just like, I didn't really feel that, just because
buried New Day.
I saw a lot of people saying it, and I thought they didn't attack them all. Like, Austin stunned Xavier Woods because he tried to get cute with Austin, and history says, you know, you never ever get cute with the Rattlesnake. He doesn't care if you're the baby face or the heel or whatever, like, he's going to stun you. But history is important, because not all fans watching WrestleMania are all that invested in the history beyond their recent fandom. Sondra, you are interesting in this respect, because we talked to you before about, you know, you don't necessarily get that invested in characters like The Undertaker, because, you know, you've not been watching him for 25 years, you've been watching him for 5 years when he's mostly been part-time and not really been at the height of his
super boring.
So with a segment like this, I mean, they're obviously characters that you're aware of, but and I think that if we're going to really sort of go to town on whether they're booking guys incorrectly, it'll be a sort of mirror segment later in the night. But did this segment bother you at all, or were you kind of like, yeah, fine?
It did. I mean,
are you the party pooper?
Sorry, I am the party pooper. Whenever Shawn Michaels' music hits, my immediate reaction is, oh, for fuck's sake. And I believe I actually tweeted, oh, for fuck's sake. Because I can't stand him, and all he does, all I've seen Shawn Michaels do is show up, super kick people, and leave. And it's really bad. Like, Austin and Foley, I really, really like. I do. And I'll say, I don't think they buried the New Day because they stunned Xavier Woods, but they did have the tag team champions lose a match to another tag team that immediately got dismantled by a bunch of old men. And it doesn't do it for me. It really doesn't. Like, because I like Austin and Foley so much, it was kind of fun to see them. I enjoyed seeing them. I thought that was cool. I'm glad that the celebrity guests going over are former wrestlers, at least, and not news hosts.
Oh, yeah. Or Stephen Amell.
Or Stephen Amell.
Yeah. Imagine if he was the third guy. Oh my god, Kate!
Right?
It's Foley, HBK, and the Green Arrow from CW.
Yeah, I mean, this segment, it's not really my thing. It's not really what I like to see. It was fun, though. So, I mean, I get that it was fun. I'm not defending the League of Nations as being this force to be reckoned with, right? Like, I'm not. They're not a force to be reckoned with.
I feel they did back themselves into a corner with the booking, though, because, you know, they were like, yeah. Oh, it's a tag title match, it's not a tag... I mean, when you see what they eventually did, it made all the sense in the world that they didn't put the tag titles on the line. When it came down to, you know, what match they wanted these three guys to come in on, and you sort of got to wonder, like, if, you know, if it was nearly 2 months ago that Vince was, you know, phoning HBK saying this is what we're going to do. Wasn't it like nearly 2 months ago they put the League of Nations together in the first place?
Yeah. Well, like, and it didn't even end up being 4-on-3, did it? Because I don't think Barrett ever was in.
No, he just kind of hung about on the outside. Because no one really likes him. But
so that was kind of weird.
Well,
this didn't bother me nearly as much as the segment later on that I'm sure we'll discuss.
Well, yeah.
But
I might be joining Team Party Pooper for that one. But we'll see. We'll see. That's the excitement of the round table. You never know where it's going to go. But in terms of the Raw sort of side of this match, the Barrett is kind of gone. You know, he got kicked out of the League of Nations because they said, you know, you're only as strong as your weakest link. And Sheamus Brogue kicked him and they threw him out, and then he tweeted, it was quite funny, he said, like, you know, rest in peace, the lads, it wasn't good while it lasted.
Yeah.
You know, I think it was really, really funny, and the thing is like, I will always think, I mean, if this is him done, which it does feel like it is, I mean, I get the feeling I'll probably be able to see him in a town near me sometime pretty soon, teaming up with his old pal Drew Galloway, or maybe he won't, actually. Maybe he'll just go and try and make movies. You know, he is Stu Bennett, the actor who plays Wade Barrett on WWE Monday Night Raw. But he is such a funny guy and a great talker. And I'm not saying, you know, he was, like, an industry changer. But I feel like if this is the end for Wade Barrett, they definitely missed the boat a little bit with this guy. I mean, I feel like he was just constant, you know, upward potential that just got cut. I mean, sometimes it was injury and things, and, you know, you can't really do anything with that. But, you know, like, he was finally getting the bad news Barrett thing over, and then they were like, oh, let's make him a king because he's British.
Take away the bad news, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was
people
going
like
to say, they clipped the wings of that one. So they were like, oh, the crowd is reacting too strongly. Can you be more bland, please? I'll never understand that. Never.
Yeah, it will be a bit of a shame to see Barrett go. But I guess that's it. And then where the League of Nations go now, I guess, is presumably a feud with the Wyatts. But more on them later, I suppose. So, what did we have next? Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, it's appropriate that I almost forgot this. Because, man, was this a forgettable... was this a forgettable so-called main event? The no-holds-barred street fight between Brock Lesnar and Dean Ambrose that was supposed to feature, Dean Ambrose was endorsed by Mick Foley and Terry Funk, and he was given barbed wire bats and chainsaws and all manner of things, and in the end, he was put away by one F5, admittedly onto a bunch of chairs. This could be one of the few matches we all agree on across the board, but I just thought this was a real big disappointment. Like, it disappointed me on three levels. It was disappointing just as a WrestleMania match. It was disappointing because I felt like they wasted Brock Lesnar. I mean, they pay him a lot of money. If he's not in your WrestleMania main event, to me, he'd better be doing something worthwhile, and this was not worth his time. And also, you know, I feel like since the Rumble, I'm not the biggest Ambrose guy, but I felt like they were really getting behind him a little bit. And then, you know, I mean, I think, David, you said that you thought he had his best night at Roadblock, and then he came out and just kind of got chumped out of WrestleMania.
Yeah.
I thought this was pretty disappointing.
This was the match that I was really looking forward to, actually. This is the match that I was looking forward to the most coming into WrestleMania. And again, I'm like you. I'm not the world's biggest Ambrose guy. I slagged him off earlier with his horrible punches. But which I found out that me and Mark Madden agree on, so it must be a fat, ugly, white guy thing. But with Dean Ambrose, though, he had a lot of steam coming into this match. That roadblock match with Triple H was my second favorite match that I've seen in the WWE this year. Third favorite match overall, actually. I really enjoyed that match a whole lot. I thought it was Triple H's best match in years, actually. I loved it. And I implore anybody, if you have the network, go back and watch it. It's really good. Now the consequences don't really matter much. But I was expecting a lot. To me, I told Kenny, actually, and he was, me and him were having a discussion about it. I said, do you really think they're going to draw blood, though? And he goes, oh, yeah, they have to. They have to. And that's it.
They, yeah, exactly.
And he nailed it, though. They had to draw blood in this match, and they didn't. I thought, the chainsaw is so stupid, right? Anytime it revs, you're just automatically like, you're not going to dismember a man in the ring. You're not.
Yeah,
going
the
to
only
jail.
Way to use a chainsaw is to do a murder on camera. So
yeah, right.
You're probably not going to do that.
Right. My it's like Triple H's sledgehammer. Whenever I
see hate it, the sledgehammer.
Whenever I see it, my dick goes limp. I just can't. I can't suspend my disbelief. Right. So, but with the barbed wire bat, I was excited for that. I was like, okay, this is something that they could feasibly do. I didn't think they would, but like Kenny said, they had to. In order for this match to work, they had to. Because otherwise, how on earth would we ever believe that Dean Ambrose was going to beat Brock Lesnar? The end result, they didn't use it, and we never had a single iota in our head, a single inkling that Dean Ambrose had a chance in hell of beating Brock Lesnar. It was a very predictable match with a very predictable outcome. I called it the second that I saw those chairs. I said, he's going to F5 him once on those chairs and beat him clean. That's exactly what happened. Also, as an aside, the only match I didn't correctly predict on this entire show was the ladder match. Otherwise, I had a perfect record all night long.
I love that you even predicted Baron Corbin.
I did. I will say this. A lot of people were like, you even predicted that? I predicted all these matches before the bell rang. I made sure to see who was in the ring, and then I made the prediction. Then I made the prediction. So it's not like
that changes things.
It's not like I went to a crystal ball and said, I predict Baron Corbin will be in this tonight, even though I heard the rumors beforehand. So I knew already coming in. But the second I saw the contestants, I was like, maybe Cena's going to show up in this or something like that. You know, I'll hold my prediction until then. But once I saw the contestants, no, it was a clear-cut winner, Baron Corbin, from the start.
Sandra, where does Dean Ambrose go from here? I mean, he didn't get... I mean, the whole belief was that... like Lesnar would. I mean, I never wanted Ambrose to beat him, but you know, we all had this idea in our heads that maybe, you know, he'd really take Lesnar to the limits, and you know,
or come out of it looking good, or like,
yeah,
you know,
but he just.
I don't even think Dean Ambrose came out of it looking that crazy, or like he would do anything.
No, they actually,
really.
The one thing I said was, please don't bring back dumbass Dean, where you know, a bit of equipment fails him, and they did. Like, he couldn't start the fucking chainsaw. I mean, I can't believe I'm quibbling over the chainsaw thing, because I'm glad it didn't start, because then it would just a whole other Pandora's box of this should not be happening. But the yeah, like, they just made him look like a moron. Where does he go next if not just, you know, back to what he's been doing?
Unfortunately, probably back to what he's been doing, because he's not in the main scene. Like, Raw kind of reset everything, right? Like, Raw hit a pretty big reset button, it appears, you know? I mean, who knows? Like, one of my theories is that WrestleMania every year is like WWE gets exposed to red kryptonite, so everything's really wonky for 48 hours and then reverts to status quo. So we'll see what happens this week, right? But Dean Ambrose, I'm not a Dean Ambrose person, and I was sort of starting to get into Dean Ambrose a little. Like, I agree with you, David. Like, that roadblock match was amazing with Triple H. I thought it was great.
Yeah,
and I was
sort
of starting to go, okay, well, Dean Ambrose, like, you can't punch and you can't do a lot of things, but you're charismatic and you are pulling off some good matches if you have them with the right opponents and under the right circumstances and whatnot. And this street fight just kind of, I was starting to get into it a little, like, because when he got the barbed wire bat and he started, like, making out with it without bleeding, which was weird, like,
yeah.
I mean, not even get a little cut on your lip, like, it, those barbs are not very Barbie, apparently, but it, yeah, like, and then it was just kind of done, and it just kind of seemed anticlimactic, and then, you know, he wasn't on Raw, which is fine, like, he's selling the injury and stuff, but they didn't even mention the street fight on Raw, did they? Like, barely?
Barely.
If at all? I don't know, like, maybe in passing they did.
Also, to be fair, like, they never really said anything about Ambrose, and I would say that Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens took, like, you know, kayfabe, worse beatings in that ladder match than he did
yeah.
in this match. And
Kevin
they
Owens
were,
got dropped on his head.
Yeah, like, he took that, was it like a dragon suplex right into the ladder?
On the
yeah.
ladder?
Yeah,
and
it,
he
it
was
looked
there.
Brutal. I thought he was injured, like right
I,
off. The
it
bat.
Looked like it. He crumpled, yeah. and I mean, he was right on his head. So,
yeah.
also, let me interrupt the conversation and just shoot forward to Raw real quick, just for a brief moment.
Go for it.
Whenever Kevin Owens came out limping from the night before, he's the only guy in the entire company to sell things after they happen. Everybody else just comes out and they're like, "Oh well, you know, I did that." And Shane did it, but after what Shane went through, if he didn't do that, Jesus Christ.
Becky's eye was selling.
Very true.
It's very true.
But yeah, poor Dean Ambrose. I mean, next for Brock Lesnar, I mean, I guess it was a nice, clean finish. I mean, we don't necessarily need to see him again until SummerSlam, and maybe Ambrose won't become interesting again until they do the inevitable Shield versus whatever they're going to call the Bullet Club thing. But next up, WrestleMania was very historic for more than one reason. One of those reasons was the reintroduction, although they're not really counting it as a reintroduction, it's a whole new title. The WWE Women's Championship was unveiled in the pre-show by Lita, and it was announced that whoever won this triple threat match would be crowned the new WWE Women's Champion. They will no longer be referred to as divas, they are simply superstars. I mean, this is the sort of stuff that they, you know, I mean, I'm glad it happened at WrestleMania because it makes it way more newsworthy, but you know, you can hashtag Divas Revolution from August all you want, but until you start doing things like this, putting them in featured matches, giving them decent video packages, and you know, calling them superstars and giving them a decent looking title belt that doesn't look like a giant, you know, predator mouth, which is not a euphemism for a vagina, but I guess that works either well.
I was gonna say it kind of works.
But yeah, Charlotte with her creepy old pops defeated Becky Lynch and Sasha Banks in what I thought was a great match. Sandra, you've got a lot of investment in these three women. You've watched them come up through NXT. Was this this had to have been quite a big thing for you as a fan, because in the way that, you know, a lot of people will say, you know, oh, just enjoy Steve Austin and The Rock turning up because, you know, nostalgia. And you're like, well, I'm not nostalgic for this. I didn't watch this. But this is your sort of...
This is my nostalgia.
This is your fan history.
Yeah, this is absolutely my fan history.
So what was this like for you? Because I thought the fact that they got, like, the cool entrances and one of the best video packages of the night, and, you know, they got the proper ring introductions for the title, and it was treated like a big deal, which is sometimes what you got to do. Like, and you just need to start, you know, you can talk about revolutions, but what you need to do is just start treating it like it matters.
You need to actually do one and not talk about one.
And this was
what you need to do.
This was what I felt like
and
was
this was
step forward.
Yeah, when Lita, because I watched the pre-show, well, as much as the network would let me watch the pre-show, and when Lita said she had an announcement or something, it didn't even click in my head until she was out there in the ring and started
like,
talking about,
I'm releasing my new album tomorrow, we're dropping
right,
it.
I know, I was like,
tonight.
Oh, the Luchagors are back together? What? but it didn't occur to me until she was in the ring with, you know, something covered up or whatever. I was like, oh my gosh, this is going to be the new belt. This is going to be the new belt. And I got really excited to the point where I got chills just being so excited about this moment, because this was huge for me. Like, this, the unveiling of the new belt and the match that these women had are the reasons that I won't call this, you know, a useless WrestleMania, basically. The Intercontinental Ladder match was really cool, but it wasn't enough to save a show, in my opinion. This it made my night. This is the most important thing to happen at WrestleMania Star for me, and it's the most important thing to happen in women's wrestling since I've been watching wrestling, for sure. And for me, this was bigger than Sasha Banks and Bayley main eventing TakeOver Respect. And that was obviously, that was huge. That was two women main eventing a show. These women stole the show for me. And to have a new belt, like, I guess I can't really overstate just how important it is to me that they're not wearing a butterfly around their waist anymore and that they're being treated as equals. Like, you know, Robert, I've been, you know, listening to Inside the Ropes since the beginning, but I've been, you know, interacting, I guess, since, I don't know, like 2 years ago, something like that, 2.5. And I've always been like, no, Divas Division, like, no, women can wrestle. Like, no, women's wrestling's good. It's good. I promise. Because it's really disheartening as a fan who is female to be kind of told by a company for a long time, like, no, women go over here. Like, no, women are, yeah, women's wrestling, whatever, if we have time for it. Like, if we have time for their match, but they're the first thing to get cut. Like, oh, the people who look like you and the people who are empowering to your type, like, we're going to put them over here. Like, women, people of color, not historically treated that great in wrestling, right? This was huge because for the first time on a grand stage, they're doing what has been happening in NXT. And I mean, you can talk about match quality all you want in NXT, and it's fantastic in the women's division. But what NXT did right a couple years ago that now WWE is starting to do right, finally, is treat women like fully formed characters, fully formed humans, give them stories, give them time to tell those stories, and treat them as performers in their own right. You know, that you don't need intergender matches for that. You can have your own division. And if you have a division that you're treating properly, then that means so much to me. Because, like, as a female wrestling fan, it's hard, right? Like, we're kind of always like, oh, are you here with your boyfriend? Or, like, why are you here at this wrestling show? Like, it's so cute. Like, I get asked questions at wrestling shows to kind of, like, prove, like, are you really a fan? Like, I've had to talk to members of wrestling audiences and, like, do trivia, basically. Like, oh, look, the girl knows stuff. Yeah. And all of that is just kind of the culture of wrestling, right? And so to see women treated like this big of a deal, and to see the company take them seriously means a lot to me. A lot. And there's an article, I should post it on ITR, about the history of what women have done in WrestleMania. Danielle Matheson with Spandex wrote an article, and I'll post it. It's really good. But she goes through how abysmally women have been treated in terms of WrestleMania, because it's always an afterthought, right? Like, they're not an afterthought anymore. Their belt is great. It looks just like the men's title, and it's being treated as important. And I got the feeling during this match, like, yeah, these women could main event a pay-per-view maybe someday. Like, a proper WWE pay-per-view. Like, that could potentially happen. I don't see why not anymore, because they're actually being taken seriously. And the match itself, like, the women were given time on their entrances, too. The women were given time for their match. They put on a killer match. I mean, there were a few missteps, but I thought it was match of the night. And I love the fact that each of them got time, Becky Lynch included. Like, because Becky Lynch was obviously kind of, if anyone was going to be overlooked a little bit, it was going to be Becky, right? But she got to have all her steam and dressed like a clock, and that was cool for her.
And she got her revenge on Flair.
And she got her revenge on Flair, which was great. I loved her diving onto Flair. I thought that was fantastic, actually. And Charlotte's robe was so beautiful. Sasha Banks with her Eddie Guerrero tribute gear with Snoop Dogg rapping. Like, that lady singer was not stellar. But
no, she was the worst.
Yeah, it was really terrible.
Because I could be totally off the mark here, but I thought that the lady singer in her theme song was Sasha.
No.
I don't know why. I thought she sang her own theme tune.
No.
For all this time. But it's not that woman, is it?
I think it might be.
Really?
I
think it might be.
I think
Robert,
it is.
Robert, come on now. You know so much about music. Me and you could talk about music for hours, right?
We could
go over a New like Order catalog, me. Right? Like we could go over a Smith's catalog, and here you are thinking that a woman sounds bad, and that, clearly, if she sounds bad, that can't be her on the record, right, Robert?
Especially when all the music is produced by CFOs with a dollar sign.
I don't think
they have these things, Robert. They're computer programs, and they can fix your voice.
I'm eating this one. Oh. I feel like I didn't hear the song and go, "Oh wow, Sasha's singing." I feel like someone has told me at some point, like Sasha.
Someone lied.
Okay, obviously, they
it was
lied.
Probably Kenny trying to make an ass of you.
Oh. Yes, and for once he has succeeded. But no, I agree with you, Sondra. And on behalf of male wrestling fans everywhere, I will punch myself in the penis 10 times before I go to bed later on. But no, it's
have fun.
Well, not like that. But the I thought this was really cool to see just the way they presented it. I mean, by the time the match started, I mean it wasn't a case of, you know, oh well, it doesn't even matter how this goes because they've done such a good job of presenting it like it matters. But I feel like going forward, this is a good thing. And when we went to Raw, I've seen a few people sort of complain a little bit not because of the crowd thing, which will, you know. So Charlotte comes out on Raw, and she tries to do the sort of dual promo. And I think Charlotte's not that experienced on the mic. She doesn't have. I mean, she might have superior genetics, but you know the genetics are not so great when it comes to the microphone thing, and she struggled a little bit because she tried to do a thing where she was going to give you the whole genuine part of it, and then she would switch midway, classic heel, and then be like, but actually I am the most fabulous. So she tried to give us the whole, you know, women's wrestling's important, this means so much, thank you to the crowd, because you know it's all, you know, they want to make it all that the crowd allowed this to happen because they had so much faith in these women. And then the crowd were kind of shitty. I mean, I get it. Like, well, they were pretty shitty at this point. This is the one that really bugged me, because I get it. You know, Bayley is my favorite female wrestler. I mean, last year I said she was just my favorite wrestler overall because I had to see everything she was doing because I just love the character and the journey so much. But, you know, it was obvious to me after TakeOver that Bayley was not coming up. So, you know, she sang. They were all kind of singing this song, and you know, Charlotte tried to riff on it, which she's not great at. You know, she's like, "Oh, is that the words?" And I was like, "Oh, love." And I just kind of, eventually, the crowd, you know, got on side and they started chanting women's wrestling. But it was a little bit like, ugh. But the main thing I wanted to talk about was that, you know, everybody left once Charlotte revealed her true conceited self. They all left, and it appeared that Natalya will be her first challenger. And a lot of people were like, what? But Sasha? And I actually liked this because to me it said that they have a plan. Because to me it says that they've thought ahead and went, well, why don't we save Sasha's win for a bigger show? Like maybe say SummerSlam. You know, in the meantime, who works really well with Charlotte? Who did she have great matches with in NXT? Oh, she had that. She had that great match with Natty. Let's do that again, because we know it's going to be a good match.
They had a great match at Roadblock, too.
As well, yeah. So we know this is going to be good. This will be like, and we can really start building up her, and rightfully, I think she was the right call to have her win this. You know, build her up big time before you have her drop the belt. You know, make it really mean something that she's gone through other women before Sasha or Becky get another shot at her. And then once, you know, I don't really want to see Bayley in the main roster until Sasha's been champ for like 6 months or whatever. So I kind of like this. David, the direction of the women's division, it has to be a positive, right? It's got to be one of the big positives coming out of WrestleMania week.
Yeah, I would say it's the positive coming out of WrestleMania week. Also, my wife always gets those questions too. She willingly went to a wrestling show on her birthday, and everybody just assumed I dragged her there. So, mm-hmm. it is appalling. And male wrestling fans, happens a lot with video games too. I find that in my current field of profession, a lot of women gamers are faced with. Well, yeah. What happens in Zelda? Whenever it's like. Bitch motherfucker, I can't even remember what happened in Zelda after the third dungeon, between the fourth dungeon. Like, I don't even remember that, and I just played it 2 weeks ago, and I can't even retain that knowledge. So if I had a vagina, automatically my opinion would be discredited due to a shoddy memory, even though I've done it. So, you know, we shouldn't live in a world where you have to jump through hoops to like something. That's bullshit. And if anyone is, if anyone disagrees with me on that, tweet me. That way I can block you, Kevin Owens style. But no, the women's division, it's really getting a little bit better. Bayley can't come up anytime soon. She just can't. And I love her to death, but she's not needed right now. I referred to it the other day because I'm fat, as there being too many birthday cakes and not enough people there to enjoy them. It's the type of thing that you have to have these women have their own spotlight for a specific amount of time. Sasha needs to be champion for like 3 to 6 months, just as you said, Robert. And that's something that you could have a WrestleMania match next year between Sasha and Bayley as the starting point of a year-long feud, something like that for the title. You know, have it to where Bayley can't beat Sasha or something like that. Something meaningful to where people want to get invested in it and they want to pick a side and everything else. And if you just brought up Bayley right now, I feel like it would just be a hodgepodge mess. But the Divas division, it's looking really strong. The match
the
at WrestleMania. Yes, it's true. See, even now they've got us programmed after all this time. Also, you know what's kind of funny? I kind of wonder if JR had some kind of say in this, because every time on every single one of his podcasts, he's just like, "Term Divas trash, get rid of it." So. You kind of have to wonder if, you know, guys like that, and I think Austin said something similar in the past too. You kind of have to wonder, because you know Vince would have been stuck on Divas, right? Like, that would have been, that's just something you can imagine him being like, "I don't understand why it's an offense, or why it's offensive to people. I don't get it." So, and also, you kind of have to wonder, I didn't think they'd actually go through with it just because of Total Divas. You got to kind of wonder what's going to happen with that now, too.
Total Women.
Oh, man, that sounds like a breakfast cereal designed for women.
It sounds like a vitamin.
Total Women. Once a week makes you feel great.
Yeah, once a week, yeah. If you're over 45, yeah, you need to take your Total Women. No doubt.
And I mentioned this on the WrestleMania 32 review I did with Kenny earlier in the week, that I thought one of my favorite photos that came out of the weekend, just to round off this part of the discussion, was pretty sure it was either Max Landis took the photo or he retweeted it, but it was a tweet where you could see there was like a young girl who looked about, you know, 7, 8, 9 years old tops, and she was leaning over the barricade intently watching these three women, not divas, these three women wrestle and be treated like stars and be treated like equals. And the little caption just said, you know, "This is why tonight is so important for little girls like that." And in the week, and little boys too. Jeez, I've seen Bayley, you know, high five little dudes when she comes out. But the number of but who cares? You know, it's been too cock orientated for too long. So let's just put it on the other side. Like, the number of times I've seen Bayley retweet pictures of little girls this week, you know, wearing her t-shirts, wearing her bands with her action figure and stuff like that, I'm just like, this is awesome. An overused phrase in wrestling, but this, I'm just like, this is so, so cool that now, you know, if any, I like to think that, you know, if any of us ever have, like, daughters, it's never going to be this thing where we go, well, you know, it's going to be a struggle for
her. You're going to have to answer a bunch of trivia questions.
Yeah, yeah. Or, you know, she's maybe not going to get into wrestling because, you know, it's all, you know, silly diva characters that, you know, compete over whose boyfriends, and all that kind of stuff. You know,
jealousy and crazy.
Jealousy.
Like, that's been the only personality traits of women in WWE for a long, long time. And I love that we're getting away from that. And that's why this is so important to me too, right? Like, we had three women who were stars, presented as stars. And, you know, part of me thinks that this WrestleMania was bad just to make the women look so good.
Yeah. I guess it passes that Bechdel test, doesn't it? That movie.
Yeah.
So next up,
talk about the finish of the women's match at WrestleMania quick before we move on?
Oh, is this the Ric Flair thing?
Yeah, because I'm curious to know, David, what did you think of it?
I loved it.
Okay, absolutely. I did too.
Absolutely loved it. Anyone complaining about it is a whiny millennial douche, and you can tweet at me so I can block you.
See, what I love about it is, like, it upset me that Charlotte retained because I didn't want her to, because I wanted Becky to win and I wanted Sasha to win, but it upset me in the proper ways. Because Charlotte's a douchebag, right? And her dad is a prick. And it was exactly what was supposed to happen.
They're heels.
I think the right call could have been, heels cheat. And I think, like, it could have been the right call to put the belt on any one of those ladies. And I think that they told a good story and I really liked it. So I was just curious to know your reaction to that.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. Because I tweeted something
also,
like,
so very, very controversial opinion. I think there was only one clear-cut winner for this match, and she won.
Yeah, I mean, I can't disagree. I think
it
depends on how you tell the story going forward.
Becky, but there was only one clear-cut winner, because Charlotte is a wonderful character right now. She is a clear-cut heel. I love that she cheats to win, unlike every other heel. I love that. No, just a wonderful finish. Wonderful decision to keep the title on her. She is a strong character. I think that she is going to be a wonderful person to give comeuppance from the baby faces from this point forward.
And I really appreciate that Ric Flair has managed to stay in the background as much as Ric Flair can.
Because the heat's on Charlotte, it's
not on Ric Flair. It's actually on Charlotte, and they're still giving her, you know, the promo time, and she's improving. She's not great on the microphone yet, but they're giving her time to improve instead of just having her dad take over. And I really, really appreciate that.
And I also don't know if you guys saw the Hall of Fame, but like at one point they did do a sort of Sasha Banks, and they showed her in the crowd, and everyone went crazy, and they showed Becky, and everyone went crazy, and they showed Charlotte, and they booed her out the building.
Yes.
And unfortunately, this is just a little inexperience, I think, on her part, she kind of went, oh, guys, come on. And I'm like, no.
Oh,
don't.
That's perfect, though.
Yeah, don't break the character thing. Don't be like, guys, come on, it's a Hall of Fame. Like, it's just me, you know, you don't need to boo me. I'm not the character I am on TV. And I'm like, no. If they're booing you, lap it up. You know, like,
learn from Chris Jericho, not Stephanie McMahon.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Booze are your cheers. That is the thing. Also, eventually they're going to do a turn here, and she is going to beat the crap out of her dad, and her dad's going to turn babyface as a result, and she's going to get twice as much heat. I love it. I think it's great. Charlotte's fantastic. She's getting better on the mic. Given another year, man, woo! It's going to be just fire. I love it.
So next up, the Hell in a Cell match for control of the WWE. Now, if you didn't listen to our WrestleMania 32 review earlier in the week, Kenny did make quite a good point where he did say that, you know, a lot of discussions over the last 4 weeks has maybe morphed this match in what it would be in people's minds, and that was not quite what they went for. It was not theatrics, it was not run-ins and cameos and all that kind of stuff. I mean, I still think it should have been. We'll find out what you guys think in a minute. This match went 30 minutes. Now, I was watching this show with two of my friends. Up until this point, some of the matches baffled us a little bit. We're a little bit baffled by Lesnar and Ambrose. We're a little bit baffled that Jericho went over. A little bit baffled that Ryder went over. But overall, we were like, this is on course for being a pretty good show. Like, this could, if, you know, if they keep going here, they could nail this. And the Hell in a Cell was really where the night started falling apart in our room, like, where we were watching it. This was when, like, fatigue set in, boredom set in, and then just real frustration at the booking. Although, in the predictions thing, you know, I talked myself out of saying Taker was going to win, but I really should have stuck with my gut. I just didn't really think he would win in the way that he did. And
yeah, when I'm the only one on Inside the Ropes that's predicting an Undertaker win, something is wrong.
Yeah, but the thing that, I mean, obviously, I kind of talk quite a bit about it, but to sort of to give a little kernel out there to kind of get the take on it from you two guys, I just thought that it was bizarre, even for WWE to have a character turn up on your show for, you know, 3 or 4 appearances in the lead up to WrestleMania to say that the show is rubbish, the ratings are rubbish, the people in charge are rubbish, the fans hate it, and if I win this match, I'll change all that, and then have them lose. And it, now, it has come out since that, you know, it's been reported by various people, PW Insider, Dave Meltzer, the Wrestling Observer, they've all said that Shane was paid in the realm of $200,000 to come back for, like, 6 weeks, wrestle this match, and that was it. So they've always known that he was not winning and that he was probably not going to be the permanent GM. Whether or not the reaction to him has changed their minds and, you know, perhaps made them say, what do we need to pay to get you to come back permanently in like a month or two when we can figure out how to, you know, write this in that you're now the GM.
Well, didn't they show us on Raw how much writing they have to put into
Yeah, but then I think that was just, I think they did book, we'll talk about it at the end, but I think they booked to the crowd, because they knew what would pop them. But yeah, I mean, this has really divided people. This was either where WrestleMania carried on, you know, being quite good, or it was where it dropped off a cliff. I thought the division was live versus TV. A lot of folk thought it was great live. Whereas I was like on TV, I thought it was very plodding and not very interesting. And I thought the bump was, you know, a hell of a stunt, but it was kind of, you know, there was no shock factor for me because I feel like from the moment he turned up and they announced it was Hell in a Cell that you knew he was going to do this. So by the time he did it, I was like, well, yeah, that's absolutely insane and crazy. But I would be lying if I said that I like jumped out of my seat or thought, oh my God, or anything like that. I was kind of like, yeah, you're doing that. And I kind of wish you weren't, just for your own sake. But, you know, the dust has settled. This is the match that I was most interested in revisiting once the dust has settled. Obviously, Shane was given the reins of Raw, but it does seem like that was just a one-off thing. I mean, he was made GM, but he barely appeared on the show. You know, they just kind of said, oh, the NXT is Shane's thing, which probably made Triple H's blood boil. I hope it did. Just yeah, just to annoy him. But, David, I'm going to go to you first, because I think you definitely at one point had different feelings about this match. I think you quite enjoyed it.
I did. I thought this was a very good match, and to all the people who didn't enjoy it, what were you expecting exactly? Did you want a chain wrestling classic? Did you want some Fitly or like what?
I thought it was what I wanted, and this is not, you know, I say the same thing with like movies all the time. Like, you know, you can't go in wanting something if you don't get it. You know, you get upset about it, but it just baffled me that they didn't do. You know, this was for control of the company. Or at least for Raw, which is pretty much is the company, you know.
Well, Vince said if you run Raw, you run the company.
Well, there we go. I didn't even remember that. But yeah, and so, and not even Vince out there. Like, I mean, I think there would have been way more drama in that jump. I think I said this on the podcast. If Vince had been out there going, you know what, I didn't want you to win this match, but I don't want you to do this jump. I mean, I don't know whether the likes of Austin and Foley would have been, you know, more interesting to be used here. I just thought this was going to be like a total like theater carnival.
So you wanted theatrics?
Yeah, I feel silly because now for 2 years in a row at WrestleMania with the Undertaker match, I've expected something, and because of my expectations, the delivery really really disappointed me. Like the one thing I said, I remember I said this when I was watching the show with my two friends. I said, the last thing I want to see here is these two guys just to wrestle your kind of modern standard Hell in a Cell match for like 25 minutes and Undertaker just wins, because that would just seem so counterproductive. Like to me, and I mean, I don't know if it did. I don't think it did. I think I'm in the minority. But it would just seem like a bit of a fuck you to the people who were like, yay, Shane's going to come back and change everything. And he didn't. I mean, I think no matter how you feel about the match, and I know you enjoyed it, David, it still is quite strange to have Shane come back and say the ratings are in the toilet, the show's in the toilet, Stephanie and Triple H are assholes, and then, you know, but I can change all that. And then he lost. It is a bit weird.
No. It's a completely valid point. Here's my thing. And I think the difference between you and I, Robert, I think that we see everything exactly as it is. The only difference with this match in our minds was perspective. I went into this match expecting something exactly like I got.
Yeah,
a nonsensical story that in the end would make me want to pull my hair out. So what I did was I put that aside. I said, Shane is losing this match because they're not stupid enough to make The Undertaker's only two losses at WrestleMania to a fucking carnage-wrecking beast. And then a guy who's been off parading in China making billions of dollars, right? Like, that is completely nonsensical. Even for WWE standards, there's no way that Shane's going over here. So let's put away all of the stuff leading up to the match, all of the consequences, all of the fallout, all of the build. Let's put all that to the side, and let's think about what we should expect for WrestleMania with Shane and Undertaker and Hell in a Cell. Okay. We have the typical Undertaker Hell in a Cell match. We've seen it a million times, right? I was thinking, okay, you know, he's a little bit older, but so long as he could pull off what he's been pulling off for all of these years that we've seen in the Hell in a Cell, I'll be a happy guy, right? So expectations automatically a little bit low. So right off the bat, there's that. Secondly, Shane is like, what, 46, 47 now? Okay, he's going to start doing stunts that he did whenever he was my age, you know, 15 years ago, right? So let's see what kind of athleticism he can pull off as a guy who is middle-aged, right? Okay, so automatically we have that. The third thing, and I'm counting on my fingers here, just for a visual cue for you guys listening at home. The third thing, what does Shane do more than anything else? It's a spot fest. He's going to go coast to coast, post to post. That's what he's going to do. He's going to jump off the cage or the Titantron. We had heard Titantron before. I said, well, no, it's gonna end up being the cage. Sure enough, it was the cage. Also, a surefire way, they had those little holes for your feet as he was climbing up the cage. So
they
always have those now, though. Oh, do they?
Yeah.
That's the first time I've ever noticed them.
Because every Hell in a Cell match involves people going on the roof. That's what I know.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Spoiler alert, you guys. That cage has some feet holes. So automatically, you have those three bullet points of what to expect. These guys are older now than they were 15 years ago, obviously. Logic would predict that. So all I wanted out of this match was a traditional Shane spot fest with his usual stuff that makes me smile. The Undertaker doing his Hell in a Cell stuff, which, you know, that's typical Undertaker. And a interesting spot. I didn't want him to die, but at the same time, it's what you expect. No, nobody would go, oh, they're going to have a chain wrestling match. It's going to be a Chris Benoit classic. You're going to see all this great stuff that they're going to do. They're going to innovate moves like you would never imagine.
Yeah, I don't like anybody. I mean, if you expected that, you must have been crazy.
Or he's going to hit him like Nakamura over AJ Styles, Nakamura at Wrestle Kingdom. You know, no one expected anything like that.
Well, they did chain wrestling in the beginning than I expected them to. Like, I think they could have shaved 10 minutes off this match.
10? I would have shaved 15 off. I think.
Okay, you could have shaved 15 minutes off this match.
I mean, I watched it back again, and ultimately, I thought about it, you know, when this was announced, you know, like, I was just like, fuck this, you know, like, this is just a last minute, you know, slapdash piece of booking, you know, it doesn't make any sense, whatever. And then I guess because when I came, you know, when I finally podcasted with Kenny about it, I was like, you know what? I'm fine with it. I deliberately sidestepped my anger about it and then, you know, spent the last couple of weeks trying to get myself excited about it. And then when we did the Fave 5 podcast, I even thought, hell, you know, some of these McMahon featuring matches are, you know, they can be pretty good. So, yeah. You know, maybe this will be like one of them. And I mean, it is not. Stand up to, you know, Shane versus Vince or Hogan versus Vince or anything like that. It's and just in terms of entertainment, it wasn't that entertaining. So I realized that when I got to it, I probably should have just been pissed off and moaning about it for 5 weeks, and then I would have been expecting it. But yeah, I just think that it's just so long for what they need to do. I think they could have shaved it, but I mean. Sandra, asking you about this, I kind of feel like I'm asking a vegetarian how they like their steak. It's just a, not for me, thanks. But then there was points weekly on the TV where you were kind of quite into the Shane story, but then ultimately, I guess
the first week,
there's no payoff to that because the story was completely secondary. You know, I feel foolish for ever thinking that they did now, but you know, they never cared. They just needed something for the Undertaker to do, and this was the set dressing for him this year.
The most interesting thing about the story is that I'm convinced Zack Ryder found Shane McMahon's lockbox, and that's why he won the Intercontinental title, and that's why Emma got so prominently featured. So, that's like the most interesting thing about this for me. It was boring. It was really boring. And I was looking forward to seeing what happened in it. Like, I didn't have any expectations. Would I have loved the Mean Street Posse? Yeah, like, of course I would, because Mean Street Posse amuses me. Would I have, you know, liked more interference? Yeah, because then it wouldn't have been so boring. Like, I think a lot of people were disappointed in the match from the perspective of they were expecting a bunch of run-ins, or they were expecting, you know, certain people to run in, or they were expecting certain types of interference. And
yeah, I thought it was going to be like Sting Triple H from last year. I thought it was going to play in a lot of history. So I thought it was going to be like fan fiction, you know, Paul Levesque.
Yeah.
Fan fiction.
And I kind of thought it had to be just because of the two performers, their age, Shane McMahon not being a wrestler. And I figured, like, what else are they going to do really to make it interesting? Turns out the answer was nothing.
Well, I've heard no one say it. Which has actually literally just occurred to me. This match went long. First of all, this match went longer than Undertaker's Hell in a Cell with Brock from October, which is an infinitely better match. And also, remember, when SummerSlam finished and The Undertaker cheated to beat Lesnar, the conversation at that time was rubber match in Dallas. You know, the rubber match will be in Dallas and we'll have, you know, Brock, you know, potentially winning, and you know, will he, you know, Undertaker's, you know, he's become morally conflicted, he's cheated to win, like, you know, but this is not the Undertaker we know. And then they ended up doing that at Hell in a Cell in October, and the reason given at the time was they had much bigger things on the horizon for both Lesnar and the Undertaker. Rumors, if you want to believe them, were obviously it was going to be what we almost knew, it certainly would have been Lesnar versus Wyatt if the Wyatt thing had in any way caught on with the fans, and it was going to be Undertaker and Cena. And it is really funny because they could never have anticipated something not really catching fire and injuries, but it's kind of funny to think that had they not blown their load last October, given also what Brock was doing on this card, which was nothing, they could have done the Lesnar Undertaker Hell in a Cell rubber match here, and they could have probably had the match that they had then. And that would have gone quite a long way. I mean, this is just fantasy. It's not really fantasy booking. It's, you know, fantasy rebooking, I guess. But it's funny to think, you know, if they hadn't gone for that back then, and then maybe decided, you know, well, we'll do it at some point, maybe not WrestleMania, and then the injuries happened, you know, they might have been able to pull it and just go, oh, let's just do it at WrestleMania after all. And they could have done Taker Brock in the Cell. And I think a lot of people would have been a bit more positive about it, because I feel that this match, whether you liked or disliked this, was the real turning point, because it was either a case of you started hating WrestleMania now, or you started disliking it in about 30, 45 minutes.
Yeah.
When it got into the really boring stages, but, you know.
Yeah, like, I mean, overall, this
pans out, you know, you never know.
Yeah, I just, the whole thing, I mean, with the company, with Raw being on the line, with all the story and everything, you know that I'm big at story in wrestling, and I think that wrestling matches should tell a good story, and I don't think they told a super great story in the match, and I think that the story, after week one, where everything happened, when Shane McMahon came back in Detroit, like, everything was crazy, and I was really excited just because it was like, well, what the fuck, right? Like, what is going to happen here? I don't know. Something interesting, probably. Nope. Nothing interesting happened, and it didn't matter in the end. So, the moral of the story is, nope, sorry, no change.
Yeah,
and
it's a little
also
bit like,
you
yeah.
wasted 45 minutes of your life, and it was boring.
It's kind of like, you know, oh, you know, the Authority are like, you know, the Empire from Star Wars. Like, imagine that first Star Wars movie. It was like, Luke Skywalker's here. He's going to end the evil ruling. Oh, he missed. He didn't blow up the Death Star.
Yeah.
Guess we're just going to have to live under Imperial rule after all.
Yeah.
So when they kind of, that was the thing going forward, is I was just so ready for the the authority to be done. I think, you know, we all three of us disagree in the match, but I don't think we would disagree in the fact that we're so ready for the authority not to be a thing. But
well, like, we figured that something had to happen with that, right? And, like, so far, nothing's happened with that. And I think that's disappointing because it seems like something that really needed to be addressed. And, I mean, they might do something going forward on television.
Yeah, they could.
But, you know,
let me interject real quick and say that Star Wars, that portion of it, was three parts, right? So let's cool our jets real quick and come to calmer heads and go, okay, well, Luke Skywalker could lose in the first part. He lost in the second part. And that was the most interesting part of it, right? Unfortunately for this was not the most interesting part of any wrestling program. The thing that I will say is, it's kind of like Luke Skywalker missed that shot, but then in the next movie, Darth Vader goes, you know what? I'll blow up the Death Star.
Yeah, that's way more.
Yeah.
That was the thing. Like, for me, it was like, okay, Shane lost. I knew he was going to lose. You know, I'm sorry. It just seemed very obvious to me. Okay, so he lost. He's not booked for any time soon thereafter. Sure, whatever. But then Vince comes out, who couldn't even come out during the main event, which was the gravest tragedy of them all. His company is on the line, and he's not even out there to just mumble, "You son of a bitch!" You know, nothing at all. That was really a mistake. But my biggest thing with that, though, is like he didn't show up, and then he just shows up, and he gives the company to Shane the next night on Raw, apropos of nothing.
Yeah, remember when he called Undertaker a bitch? And then Undertaker was
like... That
was
like, this feud is brought to you by the word bitch.
And then Undertaker said, you know, if it's not your son's blood on my hands, it'll be yours, McMahon. And then, nothing. So strange.
Never mind.
But we can talk about it till the cows come home, but we'll move on a little bit. So, Baron Corbin won the Andre Battle Royal next year, which we've already covered.
Actually, Robert, something I wanted to mention about that.
Go, something
that my favorite part of the entire match... wasn't the big bumps. It wasn't the coast-to-coast. None of that stuff, which, honestly, I did enjoy it. I may be in the minority. I enjoyed it because I went in with tempered expectations. But my favorite part of the entire match was Undertaker patting him on the cheek and then beating him. I loved it. I loved it. I loved it. I thought it was a great moment.
You know, not only...
What
again,
a heel the Undertaker is.
Again, with the heel stuff, because, you know, that is very... you know, it's not uncommon. You know, he did... little things like that in the build-up to the Triple H WrestleMania 27 match. But he did that, and then when Undertaker was walking up the aisle, and he turned around and did this sort of, smirk, like, "Let this was even worth my time." And at that point, I think
that is like a sympathetic thing with Shane. I didn't see it as a heel thing. I didn't see it as a snarky thing or anything like that. Just I saw it as a, "Hey, you got guts, kid," and then he just put him down. John Wayne style. I liked it.
I feel like The Undertaker hasn't done anything babyface in like a year.
Yeah, kicking Brock in the nuts was great.
And I don't know why everyone's cheering him. I don't get it.
Well, I mean, Jericho on Raw got one of the biggest reactions of the night after he told everybody to shut the hell up.
It's one of those bizarro crowds, Maggle. So the next thing, to move from... here we go. So, The Rock said, "I will be at WrestleMania." And to be fair, they never said what he was going to do, okay? And we assumed it would not be a match because they would announce that in advance, blah, 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 blah. But there was certainly a number of people, I would imagine, who did not think about going to WrestleMania until he was announced. Because... he is that kind of crossover guy. And I'm sure there are people in the Dallas area. They're like, WrestleMania's in town. Meh. The Rock's going to be there. Oh, right. Okay, let's get some tickets. And he said he was going to, you know, they were going to do something, you know, historic, blah, 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 blah. So The Rock comes out. You've got the cheerleaders. And you're like, okay. And at this point, you know, this is when you realize the show is going even longer than it already, you know, you thought it was going. And then he comes out with the flamethrower. And he sets his name on fire and all this kind of stuff. And I'm just like... you know, I mean, not to fight his corner, but, you know, couldn't you give Roman Reigns something cool to do when he came out instead of just punching the ground? Like, did he not have a flamethrower? Or anyway, mind you, I suppose there's a lot more letters in Roman Reigns. It's maybe too expensive.
I think The Rock should have given Dean Ambrose that flamethrower.
Yeah. That, I mean, that would have been something. He probably would have blasted his own face off with it. But...
Yeah, it started licking it, and then its tongue would catch fire due to all the alcohol in his mouth. But, you know. What...
So, The Rock is out, and he's like, and then he announces the attendance figure, and you're kind of going, and at that point I went, oh my god, was this it? Like, when they said he was going to turn up into something historic, the whole time, did people really buy a ticket? Were there, are there some people in that crowd? I mean, it didn't sound like anybody cared, but I was like, if I was a Rock fan and I bought a ticket to hear him come out and, you know, say a number, I'd be like, oh my god. So then we get lights out. It's the Wyatts. It's the characters. So insanely cool. You know, and so mad over, you know, the entrance and everything. Like, people always go gaga for that entrance.
It's but, the best, you know, entrance in wrestling.
Yeah, but, you know, but they have... Bray Wyatt has not won convincingly since Royal Rumble 2014. He has not won on pay-per-view. And I know there's a debate about wins and losses, but to me at this point, the Wyatts just seem like these kind of weird loser bums. And that's a real shame because they're very talented.
And not only has he not won, it's he never backs up what he says. Like, for me, it's not a win and loss record thing. It's, I'm going to be the new face of fear. Oh, never mind. Oh, yeah. I'm going to, you know, dismantle you. Like, I'm going to disembowel you, Rock. I'm going to eviscerate you, whatever he said. I can't remember, but oh, never mind. I'm going to stand here and look at you instead. Like, that's what, yeah. We'll
so my worst fears were, like, I went, oh, God. And right away, I thought, here we go. Like, this is going to be the thing. And he comes down to the ring, and The Rock is initially, you know, he's actually not, he doesn't really resort to the stuff that I'm not a big fan of, but then eventually he gets around to, you know, you look weird, you smell weird, you probably, you know, have sex with your parents or whatever, or they have sex with each other, and inbred, yada yada, blah 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 blah, and then The Rock's like, let's have a match! Rips off his clothes, he's wearing his gear. The Rock has, I mean, I never thought, you know, The Rock's WrestleMania resume would ever get lower than the Sultan at WrestleMania 13, but he has a match with Eric Rowan, because, I mean, at least it was him.
At least it was him instead of Luke Harper.
Yeah, I mean, God, Luke Harper.
Luke Harper, you dodged a bullet there, buddy.
And immediately I just knew the argument right away. And it was going to be either people hated it because they thought they... And I hate the word buried. I would never say that he buried the Wyatts, but... the argument would be, you know, the Wyatts didn't even get a match and they were just there as fodder for The Rock. Oh, and obviously, John Cena came and helped him. And it was funny because I always, like, one of my friends is, like, super cynical, even more so than me. And he was one of the first people to be like, oh, once in a lifetime they did it twice. And I would always joke with him and say, well, you know, when they teamed up at Survivor Series, it was never before, never again, and they never teamed up again. So I got a text from him going, ha-ha! but Rock, so that made me laugh, actually. Rock has seen a clean house. Cena gets booed, which I think is pretty merciless, but you know, nothing compared to what happened to Roman. Now I'm gonna filter this discussion when I throw it to you two through one man. Good old JR, Jim Ross, who put out two tweets. He responded first of all to everyone saying this was a disaster, and he said, which I thought sounded very short sighted, he said, you know, wait and see where they go with this on Raw. And my gut was like, Jim, are you kidding me? Like, you've got to know that it's not going anywhere. Like, The Rock and Cena are not going to... Because I saw people going, like, oh my god, they're going to have a feud with the Wyatts? I was like, no. Like, what? Like, that brilliant feud The Rock had with Rusev when he turned up one night to slap the piss out of him? And then when the Wyatts turned up on Raw and were greeted so warmly and apparently turned babyface, I'm desperate to know what you think, both of you think of that. And when the reception to that was so loud and positive, Jim Ross tweeted again saying, well, they're obviously not that damaged. And I guess there is some validity to that. Like, maybe they're not that damaged because they did still get a big reaction on Raw regardless of what happened. So, I mean, Sondra, I'll ask you first. I know where you're coming from. Like, Bray Wyatt is like your guy, and now for two WrestleManias in a row. I mean, at least last year he had the decency to put him in a match before he lost to an old dude. This year he was just in a segment where I'm not going to say buried, but I don't really see the... I mean, I'm not... I don't really see the school of thought that just because you're in a segment with someone that you're... You know, Josh Hartnett was in a movie with Harrison Ford. You know, yeah. I don't think just being there makes you a bigger star because you're with an established star. I think you really need to be quite careful.
No, I think it depends what happens in the segment.
And I just don't really... Yeah. I mean, at least he didn't lose, but I just don't really get it. I mean, but I feel like a bit of a Rock hater, so I'm going to throw it over to you guys.
Well, I'm not really going to differ from you there. I would really... You know, before this segment, I thought it would be nice if The Rock turned the flamethrower, you know, at himself instead of at his name and burned The Rock that way. And I thought that could be a great idea. And after this segment, I really just wanted to put him in a very small space with the monster Matantha Cueto and let him duke it out with Matantha and see what happened, because I assume that his face would get eaten and it would be very brutal. You know, I would like to see that live and on camera.
I'm just imagining the you know, that like WWE's classic production where The Rock is like lying at the top of the entranceway, burning alive, and it just kind of fades out to the network trailer for like Camp WWE. and they just go, oh well, and then they come back into their side and Michael Cole's like, it's been a hot night in Dallas,
right?
and they never
mention
it again. Oh, for the love of mankind.
Oh,
Michael,
gosh,
Michael
yeah.
Cole is too cute with his stuff. It's so
I hate him so much.
Yeah, like, and this is just indicative of this WrestleMania, right? Like, we promise hope and change and anything can happen. And like, yeah, in some cases anything can happen, but really they didn't have the nostalgia to lean on this year and they still kind of did it. And
my biggest fear is that for years, me and Kenny have both agreed on that at one point, it'll get to the point where they don't have any guys they can ask to come back and wrestle a match. And then my fear is it's like, oh well shit, they don't have to actually even wrestle a match. They can just come back and, you know, beat someone up in a segment, you know.
Well, that's what I'm saying, right? Like, they didn't have people to call back for matches this year. They didn't. Like, they had Shane and Undertaker in their one match, but other than that, like, they didn't really have nostalgia acts to come back and be in matches, but it didn't matter. They're still putting over the old guys, right? And, I mean, I think I said on Twitter, I think you guys might have mentioned it on the show, but, you know, if you want to know why new fans aren't investing in WWE and why nobody's seen as a star, like, look no further than this, right? Because you have... It's just so frustrating. And a lot of the frustration, too, is it's also indicative of what Bray Wyatt's been doing in the past year or so, right? Like I said, he doesn't back up anything he says. It's very frustrating to see one of my very favorites, you know, someone who was one of my favorites from, you know, fairly early on in my wrestling fandom. Like, Bray Wyatt was a thing in FCW, even. So 2012 on, I've been a big fan of Bray Wyatt. And it's frustrating because he as a character is just being stupid. I mean, this is very similar to when I fell out of love with Enzo and Cass for a little while for being stupid in matches and not, you know, being intelligent as wrestlers. And Bray Wyatt's being really dumb here, because if you look at it in storyline, like, what does he do? He comes out to interrupt The Rock, right? And I mean, thank goodness, because otherwise The Rock would just keep talking, and goodness knows, like, it took
you
him 5 minutes.
I say that.
It took him like 5 minutes to announce an attendance number, right? And like, that segment could have been so much shorter.
900 times.
Oh god!
Oh my
god! It wasn't funny the first time. So, yeah.
It was not funny at all. I just
what
know.
Is he, what is like, he saying? It's like, any of you guys fucking out there?
Basically,
yeah,
it's like
I'm
my presence
right now,
is so
bitch.
Awesome that you're gonna want to go have sex like right now. Like, I don't understand.
You guys in the nosebleeds really bored. You can't see anything. You guys just fucking up there.
Yeah, basically. But like, Bray Wyatt comes out to interrupt The Rock and say, and I love the way he talks to The Rock. He goes, Mr. Rock. You know, he's calling him Mr. Rock, and it's adorable and it's great, and it could be this cool moment, because like, if they did gang up on The Rock, like, how cool would that be if they actually got one up on him? Because why would The Rock, why wouldn't they get one up on The Rock here? Why wouldn't you do that for these up-and-coming stars, right? Like, what does The Rock have to lose? Is The Rock going to be damaged by getting his ass kicked by the Wyatts? No. The Rock's going to go and make his movie that he's doing, his Baywatch or whatever else, like the 10 movies that he's going to do this year, he's going to still do that. And it's not like anyone's going to say, oh, well, The Rock looks really weak here and we can't afford that. Because no, fuck that. Like, You know who looks weak? All of your current roster. So they come and they interrupt The Rock. And Bray Wyatt says, I'm not here to knock on doors. I'm here to kick them down. And you know what he does?
He should have just dropped the mic and started beating them up.
He should have. Yeah, what he does instead is he says, like, I'm going to, you know, dismantle you. And he doesn't. He doesn't do anything. He just stands there and waits for The Rock's next line. And all three of them do. There are three very large beardy men who are like, we're going to kill you, Rock, and we're going to make you afraid, and we're going to, you know, completely take you out, and we're going to knock down this door of opportunity, and all the, and they don't do a thing. And that's, like, so indicative of what Bray Wyatt's been doing. And that's frustrating as a fan of his, and it's frustrating from a... I hesitate to use the word creative, but it has, like, it's frustrating to think that they think this is a creative, good idea, because putting them next to The Rock so that they can stand there and look like doofuses, like, well, that's going to help these guys. And I just don't understand who gets anything from this. And it took, what, like 20 minutes?
It took a long time. Before I throw it over to you, David, I just want to say, like, someone did say this to me directly. They were like, well, what did you want to happen? Did you want to see the Wyatts beat up The Rock? And I was like, well, I get it. They would never book that. You know, they would. That would be the weirdest downer for the crowd. You know, they'd be kind of like, oh, they just beat. Well, yeah, not you. But they would. Like, it wouldn't really make much sense. Like, oh, well, the Wyatts just beat up The Rock, and I'm going, no, like, I just wouldn't have booked the segment. Like,
yeah.
My actual thing would have been if, I mean, this wasn't, you know, this is just pure fantasy booking, but you know, they're always talking about, you know, taking down the machine, and I'd be like, wow, imagine like in a different version of the show of like the Wyatts had turned up to help Shane McMahon win.
Yeah.
Like, you know, something like that. You know, because they've got beef with The Undertaker. They also probably have beef with Triple H. You know, we saw Bray and Triple H not getting on. But, you know, Jim Ross has been saying for a very, very long time that Bray Wyatt is a babyface. They're like, this guy's a babyface. Everyone loves his entrance. They get the fireflies out. You know, this guy is a, you know, he's a misunderstood guy. You know, there's a lot of mileage in him as a babyface. I don't really think they got true mileage out of him as a heel, though, to be fair. But, I mean, there's no reason he can't go back at some point. But, I don't know, David, what do you think of the segment? And what do you think about this sort of babyface turn for the Wyatts on Raw? I wasn't really sure. I mean everybody's a
is that
guy.
Really what happened?
Well, they beat up the League of Nations.
Yeah, I guess.
League of Nations are the only thing that people hate anymore. I think it's more X-Pac heat than actual heat for the League of Nations.
The lads.
Yeah, the poor lads. To throw this back to way back when, whenever you mentioned Jim Ross, said what was it that he said following the whenever they came out on Raw and got the reaction?
Oh yeah, he said, "See, I guess they're not buried. I guess they're not damaged."
Well, yeah, they're not damaged to a bunch of people who just paid thousands upon thousands of dollars to fly in from overseas and cheer the people they like, which includes Bray Wyatt. How damaged will they be in Biloxi, Mississippi in 3 months? That's what I want to know more than anything. I love this segment. No, I just said that to boil Sandra's blood. This segment was terrible. It was the worst part of all of WrestleMania. I don't even necessarily dislike The Rock. I like The Rock just fine. The Rock's funny occasionally. Whenever he gets off on a tangent, it can go one of two ways. Sometimes it works, other times it doesn't.
Homophobia or sexism?
that's one of the two ways it goes, yes. Whenever he gets into that stuff, it's tiresome and everything, but he has a quick wit about him, and occasionally he'll churn out a funny catchphrase here or there. So I generally don't mind whenever The Rock shows up. What I do mind, though, is, and you guys went around the word bury, I won't. He buried the Wyatt family here. In fact, a lot of smart marks, they like to throw around these terms, you know, like, for instance, my favorite thing to come out of WrestleMania weekend, actually, was some guy tweeted at Jericho after he beat AJ Styles at WrestleMania. And he was like, "Oh, I'm happy that you buried that midget." And then Jericho just retweeted it and goes, "Finally, you get it, idiot." And I love that. I just went over the moon over it. I
love Jericho's interview where he said, "Yep, I buried AJ Styles and I'll bury everybody."
Yeah. Oh, the best.
So funny.
Oh,
so
the second
funny.
Best thing that happened on Raw was that quip. In fact, I mentioned to Kenny, that should be like his new gimmick, is that he just goes around and he trades wins with guys like Sami Zayn and stuff like that, and just go, yeah, I buried him. Because that is the incorrect term of bury. Whenever, you know, Jericho buried AJ Styles at Mania. No, he didn't.
No,
they
he
had
beat
a wonderful
him.
Athletic contest, and he beat him. And it told a story that was much bigger the next night on Raw, but we'll get into that in a little bit. This is the correct term of bury, because he went out, and despite not wrestling in a couple of years, he pinned someone on the active roster in 6 seconds, a new record for WrestleMania. That is abhorrent. That should never happen, right? So for that to happen, and then the Cena thing, I saw that coming. That's another thing I correctly predicted. And the second it came to me, I just went out, like, I gave out this, like, guttural moan, and I was like, oh, no. Everybody was like, what? And I didn't want to spoil it because I knew where it was going. And I said, just watch what happens. I just got a bad feeling this is going to happen. And then, like, right after I said that, the John Cena music hit, and I was like, oh, no. Just put my hands in my head in my hands. But with this, the face turn, I feel like they had lightning in the bottle, and it was sort of like one of those segments in life at school where they give you a thing of flour and they go, this is a baby, don't drop it, okay? and then, like, immediately thereafter, they just start taking a knife to it and just jamming it in the heart, right? And it's just flour everywhere. And then they're like, I want another one instead. So it was like that.
Vince, there was only one Bray Wyatt.
Yes, exactly, exactly. No, you fucked that up. That baby's dead now. That's kind of like Bray Wyatt to me right now. Is Bray Wyatt's a little dead, and it breaks my heart because I thought he was the best character on television. I don't see how a baby face turn is going to fix that. Like, what, he's just gonna be like, I made some mistakes, and upon some self-reflection, like, I don't know. They could keep it tweener, I guess, but, like,
the new
eventually
oh, no.
Bray Wyatt has to start talking less and acting more, and he needs to start acting with his fists.
He needs to do something effective. I think, like, Bray Wyatt isn't beyond repair, but he needs to actually back up his speaking.
He's getting
speaking.
There. He's edging close to beyond repair.
He's getting close, and I think that
if we push it too far... The next Zack Ryder. That's my big fear, is that that's going to be a thing. And they're going... I always go back... I'm not the world's biggest CM Punk fan, especially these days, but... Here's the thing that really bothers me above all else, is CM Punk nailed it whenever he said that Vince McMahon is a millionaire who could be a billionaire but isn't despite himself. Because of things like this, he had lightning in a bottle with Bray Wyatt. If you gave me, a guy who has never written pro wrestling in his life but is a creative writer, the helm on Bray Wyatt, he'd be the most over babyface in the entire company in 1 year, or the most over heel in the company in 1 year. Just give me a direction. And that has nothing to do with my level of talent. I could be a complete idiot, which I am half the time, and I would be able to make money with Bray Wyatt because he's that much of a slam dunk. He is a touchdown. He is a home run. He is an overtime goal in Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Finals. He is a World Cup ceiling victory goal. This is the type of thing. It's very autopilot, guys. It's not that difficult. You give the guy the reins. You give him the microphone. You give him a few minutes instead of a lot of minutes to be concise with the message he is sending, and you allow him to act on it. It's not that difficult. Allow him to bruise some people, and people will fall in line with loving the guy. That's all I have to say about
Bray Wyatt. For me, I think he needs to... he needs to start talking a little bit more like a real person. Like, I mean, he's great with his verbiage and his auditory skills.
But you can do the verbiage and you can do the persona while also being on point.
Yeah, like, it can't be. No more vagaries, no more, like, flancy, flippy flu metaphors or whatever. Or, you know, just start turning that acid tongue, like, sharpen it up. You know?
Yeah.
Like,
or, you know, when he was good was when he was talking to The Rock.
Yeah.
When he was actually interacting like a human, right?
Unfortunately,
like,
it didn't turn into anything physical on his part. Which also makes him look like a coward, which is how he looked with Brock Lesnar whenever he ran away from him at Roadblock.
Yeah. Well, that's still to come, potentially, according to Paul Heyman. But so I said we'd come back to it, and I'm kind of going to lump it in with the main event. So we mentioned that Chris Jericho and AJ Styles had a match. I thought it was very good. Jericho went over, which seemed to surprise some people. Although, again, I think I said in my predictions, you know, it would kind of make sense if Jericho won here, because I think he might be Roman Reigns' guy. Blah, 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 blah. But then I was like, no, they'll give AJ. No, I think I actually said Jericho will only win if they're big leaguing AJ and not wanting to give him the win at WrestleMania, which I think could still be at play a little bit, but.
No. That's definitely, I'm going to interrupt you. Here's the thing, too, with this whole thing, right? So AJ never going to win at WrestleMania. That's why I predicted Jericho. Vince is too stubborn with that. It's like, no, he's the outsider. And that kind of leads into the main event of Raw, too, which we'll get to.
So, yeah. So, basically, you know, everybody thought doom and gloom, and Kevin Owens and AJ Styles and, you know, these guys that we all love because, you know, these guys are kind of, you know, I mean, I know Owens is a heel, but these are kind of like the big hope. You know, like, you know, feel good moment or not, we wouldn't have put Zack Ryder on our list of, you know, we hope this guy is going to be our guy in 2016. But those are the three guys we thought could be guys. Then we have the main event. Okay, so Roman Reigns, Triple H. Again, I said, you know, the worst thing that could happen here is they just go out and have a 30-minute match and Roman just wins, which is exactly what they did. I spoke about it on the review with Kenny. I thought that I actually think that the match itself is not that terrible. I saw people giving Dave Meltzer shit about it because he gave it like 3.5 stars. Yeah, like it, you know, with the right cast, you know, with a babyface people like and a heel people want to boo, it probably is a 3.5 star match. But what about you guys? Roman Reigns finally, quote unquote, wins the WWE title. And then, I guess to throw it over to what happens on Raw, AJ Styles in a barn-burning main event that featured the return of Cesaro, Be Still My Beating Heart, AJ Styles becomes the number one contender to Payback. I'm throwing a lot of stuff at you here, but I just want to get things in. My fear is that Raw was booked to the crowd. They went, okay, it's going to be this smart crowd. Let's just give them what they want. Like, let's not give them too much Roman. He was barely on the show. Let's not put Cena out there, even if he's ready, because he'll just get booed. What do they want? They want, like, Owens and Zayn and stories, and they want AJ Styles in a story and blah, 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 blah. Let's put a bunch of call-ups, because they go nuts for that NXT thing. Let's give them more call-ups than ever before. Basically, my fear is that they never said, I don't think they said when AJ Styles was going to get his match. My worry is either it doesn't happen at the pay-per-view, or that someone else gets added to it, because this was a, let's just send the crowd home happy so we don't get get lynched. Is this really the change that it looks like? Is AJ Styles versus Roman Reigns going to happen one-on-one in a pay-per-view in Chicago?
I hadn't even really thought about it. I think it could.
I hope it does. I'm just a bit suspicious.
Yeah, I think I might have said this, I don't remember when, sometime last week when we were doing lots of shows. I think I'm still new enough as a wrestling fan that a lot of the, you know, the big leaguing and the backstage politics and all that kind of stuff, part of it is that it just doesn't interest me. And I, even hanging out with wrestling locker rooms and stuff, like, I know that stuff happens, but it just, it seems so stupid that, like, why wouldn't you make AJ Styles the number one contender to face Roman Reigns? Like, other than the fact that Roman's going to get booed out of the building, but I think that's going to happen anyway, and I think
it's going to happen anyway. Right,
it's going
to
happen anyway, and I think, you know, Roman going out there and just being like, "Fuck you, crowd! I don't care. Like, I'm the guy." Yeah. I feel like that's sort of the admission, right? Like,
yeah,
maybe they just want someone to get cheered. They want someone to be interested.
Also, though, let me say, Roman's promo on Raw, I thought was his best promo in a long time, because he was very lackadaisical with it. He's just like, I don't care what the crowd says. I'm here. Let's kick some asses.
Well, so, Roman Reigns' thing is that he doesn't care. Roman Reigns has never given a shit.
Yeah,
about
but
anything.
Usually you can see his heart on his sleeve, and he comes out and he looks a little offended or little nuances like that. But
no
but
one
with
wants
this,
to
he was just
my
like, I don't care.
Well, I'm just saying it's refreshing for Roman Reigns, the character, to acknowledge finally the fact that he doesn't give a shit. Because then this is something that I wanted to say, like, in relation to the main event, but also just like the Roman Reigns situation or whatever. Like, you know, when I stopped liking Roman Reigns a lot, it wasn't recently. It wasn't when he got all this backlash. It wasn't, you know, when they started pushing him so hard or shoving him down our throats or whatever. It was right after the Shield broke up. You know why? Roman Reigns did not help Dean Ambrose one bit. Roman Reigns gave zero fucks that Seth Rollins turned on the Shield. Mm-hmm. Roman Reigns, who was the one to get hit first with the chair. That's when it started. That's when we learned that entitled douchebag Roman Reigns from NXT, that's still the guy. That's still him. That's all he is. And he's just, what has he done this whole time, right? Get title shots, act like he's being beaten down or downtrodden or whatever, but just smirking his way through promos. Gets title shots time after time after time. Well, the Authority's like, we hate you. Here, have the title. And he just doesn't care. So it was refreshing to hear Roman Reigns basically say, yep, I don't care, because that's been his character this entire time.
And what about the match with Triple H?
I thought the match was, if you watch it on mute, which I didn't, but I practically did because they turned the sound down so much that it seemed like it was on mute. If that match hadn't started after 11, and if that match hadn't had all the baggage with it, I thought it was a perfectly decent wrestling match. It was fine.
David, your thoughts on that main event? I mean, Triple H is now sort of got this albatross around his neck that whenever he headlines a WrestleMania, the match is a clunker. You know, his match with Jericho at WrestleMania 18, his match with Randy Orton at WrestleMania 25. He has more than, you know, had, you know, solid WrestleMania matches. You know, his matches with The Undertaker, all three of them,
right.
His match with Daniel Bryan. It's not that he's like a WrestleMania choke artist, but whenever he gets put in that main event, the situation always seems to conspire. And the thing that surprised me, kind of similar to the Shane Undertaker thing, was that they knew that Reigns was going to get booed, and it felt more like they were just, you know, they were like Dorothy's family. They were all just like, you know, get in the storm shelter. We'll weather it through, and just get out on the other side, and we'll just make Reigns a champion. Like they didn't even really seem to try to give Reigns anything to get the crowd on his side. They were just kind of like, let's just do this. And Triple H is like, well, I'm going to wrestle my big time 30-minute match like Ric Flair did, even if it's not appropriate for this situation.
At all.
Yeah, this is probably not what people want. And they didn't. And the thing is, he pretty much dominated. You know, he beat Roman Reigns up the whole match. It wasn't until Roman accidentally attacked Stephanie that, you know, Triple H kind of lost his bearings a little bit. And that's when Roman capitalized and won.
If I were booking this match, I would have had it be like a 5-minute squash match where Roman wins. Like,
given what time of night it was.
Given the time, given what you know you're going to get, because, you know, you can say the Triple H didn't perform up to task, but simple fact is, I mean, look at who he was in there with, right?
Yeah.
It's not like he was in there with Jericho or Orton this time. But no, I would have had that big grand entrance that they did that was so dumb.
Oh,
and just like nuclear X-Pac heat for the entrance, right? So I would have that, and all the crowds just are like, yeah, we don't like you anyway, then just have him come out and just get dominated by Roman Reigns, thrown into the steps, body slammed onto the steps, thrown into the guardrails, then brought into the ring. Have him get like zero offense in on Roman Reigns, right?
Imagine they'd given Reigns the type of match that Lesnar was given over Cena at SummerSlam.
Exactly! Exactly!
I mean, it could have just given him even more negative heat, but
It could have, but at the same time, people might go, alright, that was different. I yeah. like things that are different. Let's cheer this because it's different. So that would have been the way that I booked it. The match was, it was the worst match of the night. And I'm not even one to beat up on Roman. I'm really looking forward to Roman and AJ. I do believe it'll be a one-on-one contest. And if a single person thinks that AJ Styles is winning the title, then go ahead and tweet me on Twitter and I can block you. Just like Kevin Owens.
Yeah, Roman's not losing it until like SummerSlam or something.
SummerSlam at the earliest.
Yeah.
I would argue like Royal Rumble maybe. And maybe
Rollins takes it off him. They never really got to do Roman versus Rollins at the big pay-per-views, so...
Yeah, it might be nice. I don't know when Rollins
They could have
would
if Roman
back.
Would have given a shit after the Shield broke up.
Very true.
It's something that I would love to see. I don't know when Rollins is coming back. I would love to see Rollins return as a babyface and reunite the Shield.
Well, I actually wonder if the possibility is, you know, this is the feud because they start off with AJ versus Roman. Roman wins, but maybe this is when Gallows and Anderson come in and take out. You know, they cite. Maybe everyone's been like, "Oh well, they're gonna team up with Balor." That yeah. might not be the plan. Maybe they're gonna leave Balor and NXT for another year. They need the touring brand to be strong. Maybe they come in and help AJ, but you know, and then Ambrose gets involved, and it's still a 3-on-2, and they don't quite get the job done. And it's you know, they drag it out to the point of obviousness. But you know, they need a third. They know who they have to call. And then SummerSlam is Shield versus Bullet Club. I mean, that's big money.
You know what would actually be kind of fun, actually, is Shield Bullet Club, but then have a member of the Shield join the Bullet Club eventually. Maybe, just maybe, if you want to get heat on the Bullet Club, I know a guy who gets heat from the Shield who could easily swap places and join the Bullet Club. That would be kind of fun.
We can see. But I guess there's two ways to look at it. I mean, short-term fame. I saw a lot of fans who on Twitter were sort of going, oh my God, like this is it for the next 10 years now, isn't it? Like, they look at how John Cena's been booked and they go, this is it. Reigns is going to be the king of the castle for a decade. I mean, I have to pull a Skybox Macintosh here and assume that, you know, that's not what this is going to be like. We're not going to have 10 years.
He's not going to have the title for 10 years. Get off of your high horse.
Roman's not as over as Cena.
No, yeah, that as well. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's just not. Yeah. Like, yeah, yeah, I mean, yeah. To have the guy, to be the guy in the company, I mean, there's a reason John Cena is where he is. And, you know, love him or hate him, gosh darn it. But he's over. He's really over. He's the guy. Yeah, yeah. Roman's not. So, I mean, Roman is over, but not to the level of Cena.
No.
Now, this begs the question, though, like, who could fill that void with Cena? Because it's not going to be Roman. We can all agree on that.
I don't even know if that person's on the main roster right now.
Maybe, like, with some love and care and everything, Apollo Crews.
He'd be the most obvious choice, in my opinion, but...
Yeah, like, so long as he develops a personality and everything, you know, he's athletic, the guys would like him, the kids would like him. Yeah, maybe. Get him some flashier ring gear.
So
maybe that's it. Maybe Roman needs to start wearing neon green. Maybe that's it.
I'm dreading. I mean, you know, sometimes he changes the color of the threading on his big boss man outfit, but I'm terrified he takes a leaf out of Rollins' book and comes out in like an all-white camo sort of thing there. Oh God!
I'd be delighted.
Only Seth Rollins. I still think that's one of the greatest things I've ever seen.
Because it was bordering just awful.
Yeah,
and it was like on the border between greatness and awful, and he just rode that fine line so well. It was just wonderful, just perfect.
So is it safe to say that although WrestleMania might not have been the most creatively fulfilling show, and it certainly, I think we can all agree, it doesn't quite hold up to at least the last two incarnations. I think it's better than 28.
I would easily disagree with that. I thought this was the best WrestleMania in years.
You thought it was better than 30 or 31?
Yeah, because 30 only had two good matches, and they both involved Daniel Bryan. Last year, I didn't like last year. I gave last year like a 5.5. Besides Rusev coming out on a tank, name one good thing that really came... Well, the last 15 seconds of the main event.
The main event was quite good.
The main event was quite good.
Yeah, but we didn't want to see Roman.
But not thinking about the individual match quality, I just think that last year, I feel like for 30 and 31, I think the kind of the wrestling community all came out of those shows quite harmonious, but I feel like I feel like the theme of WrestleMania 32 is massive divisions. Like, I feel like the fan base is really split. But what I was going to say was, to try and end on a positive, was that although, you know, it might have split the fan base quite dramatically to the point where people are, like, actually tearing each other's throats out online about it, that the immediate future looks like it could be quite fun. Like, it might be quite bright. You know, if we're going to get AJ versus Roman, and maybe, I mean, okay, so maybe we're going to spend 6 months seeing Roman, you know, beat all the indie guys on pay-per-view. But if the matches are of a decent quality, then maybe, and maybe if we get this Bullet Club Shield thing, like, we're basically possibly heading into, I mean, when we left WrestleMania 30, we went into like a Daniel Bryan and Kane feud, and then last year it was just the void of, you know, it was just endless, pointless Rollins and Ambrose matches. Like, I feel like there's a bit more purpose this year. The roster's a little bit better. I feel like it could be good. I hope it's going to be good.
Things could turn into, I feel like I don't know what's going to happen. And I'm really not even looking that far ahead, like Bullet Club Shield. I haven't even really put any thought into it. And I kind of like that, because I don't know what's going to happen with this, and especially with the call-ups and with, you know, the way things kind of seem shaken up and all the returns that are imminent. I mean, Antonio Cesaro coming back was fantastic. So glad to see him back.
Yeah.
Sirens and all. I love his music. I'm not ashamed. But I think I'm more interested in just watching the show and seeing what happens and seeing what they do. Like, I'm not putting expectations on it. I'm just kind of like, what story are they going to tell? If they're going to tell a story, we'll see. Sometimes they don't a lot. Maybe they will this time. That'd be cool. Like, I thought WrestleMania wasn't great. I think Raw was kind of dire for a while, but it came back in the end. You know, Robert, what you were saying about, you know, have a good conclusion, because that's what people remember. Mm. The main event of Raw was great and left on kind of a high note. So I really liked that.
And on the flip side of that, that's exactly why a lot of people didn't like WrestleMania. It didn't end on a high note. The entire undercard, fantastic. Find another WrestleMania that has that many great wrestling matches on it.
I liked WrestleMania a lot until after the women's match.
And the Undertaker Shane thing, you know, people can divide themselves over that. I enjoyed it. The last two segments of WrestleMania were dreary and horrible.
Boring.
That's the only thing that people remember. They'll totally forget about the excellent AJ and Jericho match, the wonderful ushering in of the new women's era.
The Total Divas tag.
The Total Divas tag. The best ladder match at a WrestleMania in a few years. These are things that are going to go by the wayside because people didn't want Roman Reigns to be champion, and now he is, and that's the only thing that people can remember.
Which is a shame. And I'm now, like, furious. It's not the point of this show. It maybe should be a Fave 5 when it comes to, you've said, you know, find me a WrestleMania with better matches on the undercard, and I'm like, I'm pretty sure 19's got better matches on the undercard. But that's not what we're here for. But I just think, you know, am I being too Kenny McIntosh about this? Or does it seem like, for the first time in a few years, given the people that play in the roster, given some of the positive things that have come out of the last week, that for the first time in, I think, maybe 3 or 4 years, that the WrestleMania to SummerSlam might not be as much of a slump as it has been the last couple of years. Like, it's been quite slumpy. But this, I'm feel a bit funny about being positive about it, just because I was, you know, maybe a little bit too positive about WrestleMania, and it kind of skewed how I felt about some of the matches, But
isn't it more fun to be positive going into it? And then if it sucks, like, yeah, we can complain about it afterwards.
Yeah, I guess
but
so.
At least, I mean, if we're looking forward to something, then we're looking forward to something that we're going to be watching and spending hours and hours of our lives doing every week. So I guess I'd rather look at it like that, just so that it doesn't seem like the soul-crushing experience it might turn out to be.
Indeed. Well, we've come to the end. We've gone way longer than I thought we would. 2.5 hours. But I know you guys are, yeah, I mean, you did 7 days, seven podcasts. You're desperate for more inside the ropes. But I think for our first WrestleMania roundtable, it was quite nice to have, you know, both WrestleMania and the week's TV in the rearview mirror to get to talk about it. So thank you, Sandra and David, for joining me for this roundtable. And I'll throw it over to you guys for any final parting words. Sandra?
You know, just we'll see what happens, basically. Also, just want to mention Ryback Kalisto was a pretty good match. Loved the heel face dynamic in it. I just wanted to give them a little bit of love for the pre-show because it was pretty actually good. And I think it's a shame that not enough people got to see that match because it wasn't aired on USA. And also, Brie Bella's retirement, I don't know why they're not mentioning it, but because Total Divas, apparently, but I thought it was a really nice moment. Her transition into that Yes Lock was badass, and that's like the first time I've seen Brie Bella do a good wrestling thing. So I just wanted to mention that to you because that was actually really, really good. And it was, I actually got choked up seeing Nikki come out on the ramp. But other than that, thank you for, you know, letting us air our WrestleMania thoughts, grievances. Cheers. I don't know.
Your grievances with
airing insight. Our grievances. No, I mean, overall, WrestleMania kind of a mixed bag, but no, it's been fun to be part of it.
And David, the beloved Inside the Ropes listeners, any parting words?
I just wanted to say that I'm happy that I have been the person to defend WrestleMania 32 because I thought it was a solid 8 out of 10 show. It was the undercard's fantastic. I know I'm not the only one out there who enjoyed it and who can look past the stupid storyline between Shane and Undertaker and the terrible main event. So if you can look past those two things, just shut it off at the final hour and you'll think it was one of the best WrestleManias in history.
David McCutcheon coming to the WWE Network near you soon.
Yeah. Hey. Just think of it this way. The women ushered in a new era, right? Well, the women's championship match was the main event. There you go. Just turn it off after that one and you're good, right?
I like it.
I think even the king of positivity, Kenny McIntosh, is just giving a big, oh, for fuck's sake, get that. But no, thanks for joining me. We're going to have Sandra, I think we're going to do some kind of NXT thing next week, but I don't even know what it's going to be. I don't think we talked about it. But then I also, David, we're going to do another Faye 5 in the next week or two, so there'll be lots more stuff coming from us, and I'll edit in an audio vignette at the end for the return of Kenny in the style of the Primo and Epico coming back. something along
if
those
Peyton
lines.
If Peyton Royce doesn't manage them based on love of flowers, they missed a huge opportunity.
Yeah, thanks everybody for listening. Check us out on the Facebook and the Twitter. And also, if you listen to us through iTunes, if that's your mode of podcast listening, then please go and leave us a review. It would really help us get above other shows, not to mention any that we would possibly like to beat, like Vince Russo's The Brand, or indeed any other wrestling podcast. So please go leave us 5 stars! Leave us 5 stars! And the more interactive on the iTunes, the better for us. But this concludes Inside the Ropes WrestleMania 32 coverage. This is it.
Talk to you later, bro. The WrestleMania's over, bro. Go praise Jesus and get ready to listen to Vince Russo's next sexist podcast, bro.
Shake them titties for Jesus. Right. Okay. We'll see you.
I'll get right on that.
Come to the YouTube channel. Right, bye-bye.